Joe Rogan Podcast. Check it out.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night, all day.
Paul Felder, ladies and gentlemen. How are you, sir?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me, dude.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
I love what you've done because I think every professional athlete, every fighter, when you're done competition, you need something to drive you. And you decided to go into triathlons, which I think is fucking awesome.
Yeah. And I stumbled upon it. I didn't have any idea what I was going to do when it was all said and done. I thought, you know, I'll be like everybody else. I'll do grappling competitions. I'll hit pads. I'll stay active. But that's still not the same as getting to the cage and actually fighting somebody. And I stumbled upon this guy, Lionel Sanders, who I kind of found on YouTube, just looking up run workouts. Because I was getting bored during the pandemic. You know, I was going outside. I was going for these runs, and they were getting boring. You just run miles. I was like, how do guys do this? You're just running to run all the time, and like there's no structure or anything. And I found one of his workouts in Arizona where he was running. It was like 107 degrees, and he's doing like crazy tempo workouts. And I was like, oh my god,
what's a tempo workout?
So, like, all your runs kind of break down into, you know, you have your easy miles, aerobic, right? And then you have where you kind of go a little bit, you're not quite going as hard as you're going to go for a race, and that's like tempo. So you're upping your heart rate into that kind of zone three area where you're keeping it right there. You're not going threshold, which, you know, kind of just below all out. And he was doing that, and it was like 100 and something degrees. And I was like, this dude's out of his fucking mind. And I started following all his stuff, and then I started realizing how crazy this sport is. If you really watch these guys, I mean, they're freak athletes, these guys. Plus, yeah. MMA, right? You wrestling, jiu-jitsu, kickboxing, boxing, traditional martial arts. Well, now I found this other sport that's totally new to me, that I know nothing about, that I can dive into, and it's all these different disciplines. So I can be an idiot all over again and not just pick one sport. I can do all three of these things. And I didn't even know how to swim.
Yeah,
like, I grew up in South Philly.
Bilal told me.
Oh, bro, I swam with Bilal. If I don't know how to swim, Bilal super doesn't know how to swim. He sucks, but he does it just like anything. He gets in there, he does it. I've swam with him. He's done a triathlon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he did it on like a borrowed bike, a borrowed wetsuit, which was like a surfing wetsuit. Like not what you would go and swim in, you know, cold water with for, you know, having any flexibility in your shoulders. But yeah,
so these triathlons, like how long does it take to complete one of those?
Well, it depends, right? There's sprint distance, which is a really short one. I mean, you can do those, the guys are doing those like, you know, under an hour, like 45 minutes, 30 minutes, you can do some of them. It's like a quarter of a mile swim. It'll be like a 10-mile bike, and then I think a 5K.
And you always, it's always swim, bike, run?
Swim, bike, run. Unless you're doing like Super League stuff, which is just this other organization that's now kind of mixing up the order of which they'll do things. A lot of these races, they'll do swim, bike, run, swim, bike, run, swim, bike, run. So these dudes are literally, and women, are tucking their caps and their goggles and stuff while they're riding on the bike and stuff like that. And then they pull it back out as they're sprinting to the water, putting their cap back on their goggles and diving in after having just run, you know, probably like sub 5 minute miles, diving back into the water to not be able to breathe correctly.
Jesus. Which
is the scariest thing of it all. But the ones I do the most are 70.3s. So it's like the half Ironman distance. So it's 70.3 miles. It's 1.2 mile swim, 56 mile bike, and then a half marathon.
Jesus.
Yeah. And I started with that, like an absolute jabroni that I am. Everybody's like, do a sprint, do an Olympic. I was like, no, I want to do this one. And I did, and oh my god.
Well, I remember the first time I saw you when we were getting ready for a show, we were in the green room getting changed.
I remember,
like,
this.
What are you doing? I'm like,
you look like shit.
I'm like, are you on Adderall or something?
You thought I looked like a crackhead.
You look like
a crackhead.
You were so sucked in.
Because I had just done that race. So when you saw me, I was still trying to even, like days ago, I had done that race. And it's like cutting weight.
You must lose like fucking 20 pounds running one of those and doing the swim and doing the bike.
You probably lose about 10, and that's with
hydration.
Hydrating the whole time, yeah.
Whew. And so how far are you going to try to push this?
Well, to the absolute limits of being an amateur, because I'll never be. I mean, these guys, Joe, that do it pro. I mean,
I don't believe you. I don't believe you.
You're a psycho.
I would
love to do it professionally.
You're a psycho. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But I don't even want to say that. I feel like it's disrespectful to the guys that I know that are pro and how fast they are to say that yet. All I want to say now is I want to do it and be – I want to win age groups, right? And my age group, you know, 35 to 39 is – these dudes are fast because a lot of them come from a collegiate background of some sort of – whether it be swimming, cross-country, track.
Mm.
And then same as me coming from MMA, they don't have that anymore and they find triathlon. But they at least have the base of an endurance sport, whereas MMA is not – as much as we want to say you have to have great endurance, and you do, which most guys still seem to don't understand that, but it's not the same. Like 25 minutes is the longest fight that we could possibly have.
Right.
That's the swim.
But when you have a guy who has great endurance, they have such an advantage. Like Nick Diaz in his prime would put a pace on people that they could not fucking keep up with. I remember when Nick Diaz was at his peak, when he was in Strikeforce, when he was a champ over there. You remember those days?
Mm-hmm.
Dude, he was putting a fucking pace on
And he would
people.
Get his ass beat for the first 5-10 minutes of
a
fight.
He would force a slugfest, so someone would try to go all out.
Yeah.
And he would be hitting them like 50-60%. And then every now and then he'd dig. Every now
to
and
the
then
body
he'd dig.
In particular.
Yeah.
Like the Paul Daly, I think, fight.
What a fight.
I'll never freak that
what
one.
What a fight.
I'm like, oh, he's dead. He's done.
Paul
There's no chance.
Daly has the most ridiculous left hand I think I've ever seen in the business.
Yeah.
He is so, and he's so skillful.
Yeah.
So slick in his maneuvering and like the way he sets up uppercuts and hooks.
Yeah.
His fucking left hand is a weapon, man. And he bombed on
Nick
Diaz.
Him.
Woo!
Crushed him.
I thought he was done.
And he just did what the Diaz brothers do. They take that shit.
It's crazy.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Crazy how they take it.
And that's got to, like, that demoralizes you, man. Like, you're in a cage fight with all these people watching, and you got this crazy son of a bitch going, come on, man. That's all
on.
You
Hit
got?
Me again. Yeah.
And you're known for knocking dudes out like that? You just, your heart immediately, you shit it out. You're like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm.
Which is credit to Josh Thompson, because Josh Thompson is the only guy to ever stop.
Put his shin right upside that head. That's
legitimately
what he did.
Stopped Nate Diaz.
Yeah.
Legitimately stopped him. But that's like, the way he landed it too, it was so perfect.
Yeah.
It was like the perfect head kick.
Well,
and still,
he was like bent over.
Yeah.
And he still wasn't perfect. out.
Still wasn't out. Crazy how tough those guys are.
Yeah.
I mean, but I think a giant factor in especially Nick's early success was
the cardio. Yeah.
And he's known for doing a lot of like long runs and
triathlons. And they do, I know even just recently, a guy, this kid Justin that I train with did Xterra. He did an Xterra race with him.
What is Xterra?
So that it's more like mountain biking, trail running, as opposed to, you know, the TT bike out on a highway type, you know, the waters are a little bit more rugged. It'll be a little bit colder, crazier areas that you're racing in. So it's a little more like wilderness type racing, but it's still a triathlon, still swim, bike, run. But you'll be up and down, you'll be running through trails and like through trees and over stuff like that.
Running from bears, swimming away from sharks.
Yeah, well, don't talk about it. I was just in Rio and I was swimming in the ocean every day. And I know everybody's like, oh, there's no sharks there, but
are there
dude,
no
you
sharks?
You can't
there?
Help but when you're swimming in the open water, you kind of. I had a can of soda brush by me at one point, and I almost pooped myself, I swear to God.
My friend Peter Atia, he swam all the Hawaiian Islands.
Yeah.
He did this crazy swim, and he was training for this in San Diego, and I think the week he was training, some guy got eaten by a great white shark. So he's out there in the very waters where a guy got bit in half.
Yeah.
And apparently they were all training for a triathlon, these people that were doing it.
Yeah.
So there was like a run of them. There was like, you know, like 10, 15 guys swimming and just one of them. Ka-chunk.
My first race this year is in Oceanside. So
where's Oceanside?
It's like outside of San Diego.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, Jesus. Oh,
yeah,
God.
April 1st.
Oh, my goodness.
April 1st. It's ocean swim.
Fuck all that. I was in Maui last November and... a buddy of mine was just there this past, Duncan was there, like when? Like 2 months ago? And some lady was snorkeling with her husband, And the guy pops his head up, and they're screaming at him from the shore, get back in shore. And he looks over, and there's all this blood in the water and thrashing. And he gets to the shore, and he realizes it's his wife. They never even found her.
Yeah, well, because she's gone.
Yeah. Diver decapitated by 19-foot great white shark in the Gulf of California, report says. Local divers have been warned about the presence of sharks in the area. Fuck that. Does this just happen?
Yeah, January 5th.
They
paid him extra money to go down because no one would go get the mollusks, so he went and didn't make it back out.
Oh, my. Mollusks? Like, yeah. What kind of mollusks?
They're, like, and also, I guess they're 20 meters down or so, 10 to 20 meters down, so he was down a pretty specific
So amount. He's down really low, and a 19-foot shark decapitated him?
36 to 59 feet, actually.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, my God. Fuck that, Paul Felder.
Can't
what
wait
are you
for
doing?
That swim. And the best part is we wear black wetsuits that make us look like big old seals flopping around. And
do you have to wear a black one? Can't you wear like a neon
green one? If you can find a bright, I don't know, do sharks see and do they see color, though?
They probably don't see shit.
Black and white. So that pink one is white, I guess, to them.
Yeah, it's like the underbelly of something delicious.
Well, there's thousands of us out there, so you just got to be lucky.
Oh, boy.
You just got to be lucky.
Fuck, man.
Well, I did a race in Florida, and there was 100% a gator off on the side that somebody sent me a picture, thank God, after the race. They're like, oh, by the way, this was sitting on the side of the lake that you guys were swimming in, just waiting for us to finish.
If you're in Florida, virtually any body of water could have an alligator.
100%.
Which is so weird.
It could be like in a development and there's like a little pond and they might just be like, oh, I'm just going to go take a splash in here.
Oh, yeah. I remember like a year ago, some old lady who was walking in this beautiful gated community in North Carolina and she got snatched up.
Yeah. They'll eat dogs and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. I used to live in Gainesville. When I lived there, back then, alligators were endangered, so you couldn't kill them. So they were everywhere. And people would feed them marshmallows. There's a place called Lake Alice. We go to Lake Alice and throw marshmallows in the water.
I wonder why marshmallows, of all things.
They found out they would eat them, so they'd throw them in. You know,
throw some graham crackers at them,
they'd
too.
They'd eat chicken, too. They'd eat meat, whatever the fuck you want to feed
them. That's what I would think. I would think protein.
But they're fucking monsters. I hate those things. They really drive me crazy.
I mean, they're truly, you know, a dinosaur, basically, that still lives.
Yeah, just a heartless fucking reptile.
Just wants to rip your leg off.
And
roll.
There's a video that I put up on my Instagram from one of those, like, Nature is Brutal or Nature is Metal pages. And it's a crocodile grabs this wild pig and snaps it in half. And it's got it by the jaws, and it just...
Yeah, just rips it straight off.
Just with like a flick neck.
I've seen one of those. And, dude, you see them... These guys still have they're so stupid to... Oh, I'm going to put my hand... your hand in there.
Oh, yeah, all the
time. It's like it's going to shred everything off of you if it can.
Yeah. There's like sideshows that they do where guys like touch the inside of the crocodile's
they
mouth.
They screw up, right? Because I think what happens if you touch their tongue or something like that, because otherwise I don't think it even knows what you're doing. It's just waiting.
Yeah.
And the guy's not paying attention, slips up. Oh, see ya. Man, look at this guy. Florida man.
Oh, God, he lost his arm? Shares survival story after alligator rips off arm. He gets lost in a swamp for 3 days. Oh, I saw that guy.
Now, let's be fair. He doesn't look like
whatever
he's got much
he was
else
on.
Going on.
Yeah, that meth kept him alive through that entire journey.
Yeah, he 3 days he didn't lost feel much of that one.
With no arm.
Florida man.
That might be just a cover story for some fucking crazy meth explosion.
Yeah.
Man, a gator got me. I swear to God, I don't fucking even touch meth. It was a goddamn gator.
Goddamn gators.
It's just any sport that involves maybe getting eaten.
Yeah. You're not going to get eaten inside of the octagon. I mean, it's definitely a safe environment as far as MMA. You just got to deal with the other maniac in there that's trying to kill you.
What was the catalyst for you deciding to retire? Because you retired in like prime age. Like you were like how old were you when you first decided?
I guess when I first said it after the Hooker fight I guess 37.
Yeah, so it's like at the end of
I started late too. I didn't turn professional until I was 28, I think.
Wow. When was your first amateur fight?
I think I was like 20, 26.
Really?
Yeah.
So when did you start training?
Well, so I did Taekwondo since I was a little kid. Started 12 years old doing that and competed Junior Olympics, Olympics, you know, wearing the hogus and all that kind of stuff. Did all the traditional Taekwondo tournaments. And I used to get kicked out of some of these things because I'd throw punches or I'd throw too hard. Like, I remember one time my mom ended up getting into this huge argument with this guy because I was hitting her son too hard in a martial arts competition.
Oh, God. But parents.
Dude. And my mom is parents. Like the sweetest woman in the world. But as soon as somebody talks ill of me or steps to me, my mom's ready to throw down. She's the one that taught me how to fight, man.
Wow.
Yeah, I got stories about mom. But I did that all the way through until I was in college.
And you were...
And then I went to acting school.
Yeah, you were a theater major.
I went to school for theater, yeah. And I kind of stopped training hardcore, but still taught karate at the school that I got my black belt at when I was a kid while going to school in Philly for acting. I was still teaching the little kids.
Oh.
And then I was working professionally in like the Philadelphia theater scene, which isn't anything major, but there's some good professional theater companies there. I was doing that for a little while. And in the summers, the theaters, they're dark. There's not much going on. And a buddy of mine that I used to train with took an amateur fight. And I used to kind of get the better of him. And he went and did well on this amateur fight down in Atlantic City. New Breed Fighting is what it was called. And I was like, I could do that. So I waited a whole year, did the next summer, signed up for one of those fights. And dude, that was it. That walkout, the crowd, like all your friends and family being there, you're walking out to fight somebody else. I remember having migraines. I remember like vomiting afterwards. I was so anxious, so nervous, and I won. And I remember telling all my acting friends at the time, we were drinking in like the back of somebody's like South Philly row home. And they're like, that was crazy, man. Are you done? And I was like, fuck no. I was like, I have to do that again. And I have to do it better than I did that time. And so a year later, I signed up for another one following summer, New Breed. But I knew what to do now. So I trained properly. I went to a Muay Thai school to train for it. I did jiu-jitsu for it. And I beat the crap out of this kid in my second fight. Leg kicked the dog shit out of him. And it was a decision, but I was like, all right, that was cleaner. Then I did another one. And now I thought I was too cool for school. And I got choked out in my third amateur fight, got triangle choked by this kid, Max Bohannon, who was like a prodigy from, he was from Ricardo Almeida's school and trained with him. And he choked the shit out of me. And then I was like, okay, now I got to start doing real grappling and real jiu-jitsu. And I started training with jiu-jitsu schools and stuff like that. And I did one more amateur fight, spinning back kick to the liver. I knocked this kid out in my fourth amateur fight. And then I went pro because the rules in PA, shin guards, big, huge, puffy gloves, 2-minute rounds.
Mm.
What the hell are you supposed to do as a striker with 2 minutes? You're a wrestler. You get one takedown, you won the round. That's it. So when I turned pro, I was like, okay, I'll do one pro fight. Just to say I was a pro athlete, you know, just to say that I did it. Honest to God, that's why I did it. I was like, I'm going to go back to acting. And I was still doing professional shows in between getting ready for fights. Won the fight, flying knee, TKO the dude. They took him out on a stretcher. It was for CFFC. They had to stop the show because they only had one ambulance.
Oh, wow.
So the ambulance had to take the guy, and shout out to him, Toomey Goodrum. You're still the man. But they took him out. And they had to wait for the ambulance to come back. So I'd stopped the show in my first
wow,
my first pro fight.
One ambulance?
And it took him out on the, they took him out on the stretcher.
No, but I mean one ambulance.
One ambulance,
crazy.
Yeah, and they never did that again.
Yeah.
They never did that again. I show them you need to have two ambulances at these things.
So you get some fights in some small organizations.
Yeah.
And then how old?
Mainly Cage Fury, who, you know, thank God that's kind of who I stumbled upon. So I was already kind of with one of the better regional promotions to begin with. I lucked out with that. I fought in Pittsburgh, I think, once or twice. And then, and I fought for CFFC.
And how many fights did you have before you got into the UFC?
I was 8-0. I was 8-0 when I got signed. I think I had like 6 knockouts, a bunch in the first round. And that's when I started putting the acting like way on the back burner. I was like, wow, I might actually be able to get into the UFC. It was that was never, I mean, never the goal was to get in the UFC from the beginning. But then once I started winning, I always trained my ass off, you know, just like I am with triathlon or whether it be acting, whether it be fighting, commentary. Like, I'm trying to put myself into it. And the wins started coming. And then I remember I knocked out this kid in Atlantic City in my last fight with CFFC, a spinning hook kick to the – yeah, this is it. Bam.
Oh.
And look, I got more damage from the ref throwing me into the cage than I did in that whole fight.
What did you weigh here?
That's 155. I was just smaller. You know, years, shredded. Dude, think about, like, you know how it is.
Yeah.
The years and years of you doing strength and conditioning and you building up those muscles and your bones get denser and stuff like that. So, I mean, by the time I got to the UFC, plus the lightweights were so big, I remember thinking, like, I have to be bigger than these guys. And I had this complex that I had to weigh so much, so I'd go and get so fat in between fights. And that's one regret I have. Looking back, I would have stayed leaner and in better shape all year round. And not done the drastic weight cuts that I did.
Is that, like, the thing that you worry the most about? We were talking about that earlier.
Well, I know for sure that I've hurt my kidneys to the point where even after fights, like, I've had rhabdo after the Dan Hooker fight. I was, like, peeing Coca-Cola.
Ugh.
And they made me stay in the hospital for, like, an extra day or two to monitor my kidneys. I almost had compartment syndrome from that fight. They were going to have to slice my calf open. I've obviously lost a piece of my lung in the James Vick fight.
How'd that happen?
The end of the fight, he knees me, and it pushed in my ribcage. A lot of people thought my ribcage broke. It didn't. Nothing broke. But I had they call it like a bleb on your lung that you would only know about if somebody went in there or something happened to it. So it's like a bubble that naturally forms on your lungs, and it's okay unless something hits it. Well, that knee just so happened to hit right on that spot, and it just so happened that I had this thing on my lung, and it burst.
Whoa.
So it collapsed my lung. And since it collapsed, that part of my lung was then damaged, and it wouldn't normally, if you like fall really hard doing snowboarding or something like that, or, you know, if you're rock climbing, you fall and you land on your ribs, you can puncture them by breaking your ribs, or you can just, the impact can kind of almost like blow it out. And a lot of times they'll go back on their own. Like they'll reinflate. Your lungs will kind of heal themselves. Or they call it like a pigtail or something. They inserted this tube down into my lung, which was like a vacuum. It would suck the air around my lung and my chest wall out, forcing the lung to go back around where it was supposed to. And that wouldn't work. So like 3 days went by. They did that for a couple of days, wouldn't work. And then finally the surgeons came in. They're like, we're going to have to go in, find where the bleb was, cut it out, staple your lung shut, and then adhere your lung to your chest wall. So my left lung is attached to the inside of my chest wall. Like an elephant. Apparently elephants, their lungs are actually attached to the inside of their chest wall. So this lung, like if you stab me here, and it would never fully collapse again.
Wow.
I'm like a superhero.
Does
on
it
this side.
Change the way
except for the inch that I'm
move?
Missing from it.
Does it change the way your body moves? Do you feel it?
No, I will get a cramp every now and then in the surgery area that they have. I still have a scar. It goes right across like Jesus, like where they, it's like right along here.
Wow.
That was miserable, dude. That's one of the many things. I know we kind of went on a tangent, but retirement was like, I can't.
I broke your forearm in the Mike Perry fight.
Broke my forearm in that one. You guys called that one nice. You could tell by the way I was holding my hand funny. And I remember in between rounds going like this, and I could feel the bones crunching together on the side. And I told
That's
Duke,
so
I was like, he's like, I know, baby. I know.
It's so common with those spinning back fists.
Yeah.
So common. You hit
and then
the
you know
forehead.
What's dumber is throwing it like 8 more times in the same fight. And I remember you and I think it was you and Dom. Like, oh, God. Stop throwing that arm.
How
but
many
it's
people
instinctual.
Have done that? So many people have shattered their forearm.
Dom had done that in training.
Really?
Which is why when he's calling with you, he's He's going, oh, because he knows exactly what it feels like. Yeah. Stupid, man.
Yeah, spinning back fist and catching that forearm to the forehead.
Right on
so
the forearm.
Common.
Just snaps it in half.
I mean, it's such a, obviously,
your forehead
vulnerable.
Is so freaking dense.
Yeah, you get that. You get a lot of breaks from checking kicks incorrectly or blocking kicks incorrectly.
I love that. You know what I regret never getting injury-wise? I know it sounds silly to say, but the slices on the shin that you see all these guys getting from checking kicks and your shin is just like pouring blood.
Bro, whose shins are harder than Jan Błachowicz? That Ankalaev fight, he's just
he
like going shin to shin with him.
Yeah.
Like, holy fuck, man.
It's Polish guys, man.
But it's him. I don't know if it's all Polish guys, but that motherfucker is made out of wood.
Yeah.
He's different.
Yeah,
he just went shin to shin with him.
He doesn't care.
Yeah, I mean, that was very, very impressive. Because we were like, this is crazy.
That hurts, man. Yeah. You've gone shin to shin. It hurts.
Horrible. And he's just cracking them. Yeah. Just getting in there with it.
It's like two baseball bats just...
Yeah.
And it's like you when you see people kind of criticize, the leg kicks are not that bad. It's like,
oh, you don't know.
But you have no idea.
Anybody who says that, let me kick you.
Just one time.
Just let me kick you one time.
One time.
I won't even do it all the way.
No.
I'll kick
20%?
You
50%. Yeah. Not even 20. Give somebody 20%.
50. They deserve 50.
Imagine the calf kick. Give him just 20% of a calf kick. It's like, do you like walking?
I've only been calf kick fucking around. I never calf kicked either in training or in a fight because there was no calf kicks back then. Like Bisping told me he went his entire career without getting calf kicked.
No, of course, yeah.
Which is crazy.
The first time that I had actually, the first time I ever experienced it was when I fought you remember Mark Stevens from The Ultimate Fighter?
No.
Way back in the day, he was on like Team Koscheck. I fought him outside of the UFC before I got in. And he was training down at ATT. And those guys have been throwing that calf kick for a long time. And he probably landed about four or five. And I remember thinking, like, what the fuck is he doing? Mm. He's missing my thigh.
Right.
But then I remember like, kind of moving around in the second round, like, holy shit, this is cramping up really bad. And luckily, I got him out of there. But that was the first. And then Dan Hooker was the other time that I'd
Dan
really
Hooker's
been.
Dan Hooker's very good at it. He's very good at it.
Because he just places it.
Mm-hmm.
He just touches you. And you're like, oh, that wasn't that hard.
Benson Henderson was the first.
Yeah.
He was the first guy that I ever saw use it
in
the UFC.
He also would punch you in the thigh.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how effective
that
one was.
Anderson used to do that, too, for fucking around. But Benson was the first guy that I ever saw that like regularly threw calf kicks. But for whatever reason, it didn't have the kind of effect that you're seeing with guys now. Where I don't know what it is.
I don't know if they're placing it more effectively on – because where it really hurts is like right next to your shin bone. Like that
–
just all that – the meat and the nerves that goes right along the bone. So it looks like a lot of times you'll hear guys, oh, nice check. It's like he didn't check that.
Because
it just has to touch that muscle on the side of your shin bone. So it looks like you checked it.
Yeah. Well, I think the casuals got woken up to it in the Dustin Poirier-Conor McGregor fight.
Yeah.
In that fight where you just see how he's just so compromised. And even fights where you don't think that a guy's compromised, like Adesanya Pereira.
Mm-hmm.
Israel said after the fight, he's like, you fucked my leg up. My leg was
useless.
Yeah,
you watch it in the replay. Yeah. I didn't notice it even because I was upstairs watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they started showing the highlights later on, I was like, wow, he like went down from the one check too. Mm-hmm. So he checked it really weird. And
well, he
kind of
like
got calf
tripped
kicked.
Over his foot and then went down. So we said, oh, he just stumbled. But it was really because his leg wasn't working well anymore.
Already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the first round. I went and I've watched that fight several times. And
apparently so has Alex Pereira.
Yeah.
Made Glover watch it every time
really?
He comes over. Apparently he puts it on. Yeah.
I watched it again, and it's that first round. That first round, he fucking really chops at it. Really, he's got a very strange style. It's very uniquely
Pereira?
His, yeah. The stand-up style, it's very different. Like his hands, he stands like this.
He's just freakishly long and big for that weight class.
And his power is preposterous.
You ever see some of those guys? Like when you look at certain skinny guys, and I'm not calling him, he's not like a...
He's lean.
But he's lean. And you,
tall and lean.
Those guys are the guys I worry about.
Mm.
Because it's those guys that hit freakishly hard. That it's the big muscle guys, you know that guy's going to hit you hard. But it's these sneaky, tall, lean guys.
Those Tommy
Hearns
looking
dudes.
Yeah,
and they just, when they turn into those hooks, his left hook.
so much torque and leverage. His fucking left hook is a thing of beauty, man. It yeah. really is. I mean, his everything is fucking sick.
Scary dude.
He's such a scary guy. And the high-level kickboxing experience that he has, like coming over from Glory. I'm, you know, I'm very interested to see what Israel does different in the mm-hmm. second fight, but I'm really interested in seeing him against someone who can wrestle. That's what I'm really interested in.
I was just going to say, it's kind of working out perfectly for Alex, where you get another shot.
Yeah.
You know, you get to go and face Israel again. That's the best matchup for you. You got a guy that is mm-hmm. probably going to stand with you mm-hmm. for as long as the fight lasts.
Yeah.
When he's really going to get challenged is when he has somebody that's going to say, that.
Marvin Vettori.
I'm going to grapple your ass. Yeah. I'm going to pressure you up against the fence. Mm-hmm. And for guys like Vettori, it's got to be like, all right, they want him to stay the champ.
Yeah.
Because Izzy already had their number, and he's been there. But as long as Pereira's in there, another kickboxer, but with a different style, maybe not as much experience in the grappling department, they're chomping at the bit to get in there. Well,
not necessarily chomping at the bit. He's fucking scary. Robert Whittaker. You know, Whittaker's very well-rounded. He's an interesting matchup for him. There's very good matchups in that 185-pound division. But in my opinion, what's interesting is he's a specialist. He's like a pure specialist.
Yeah.
I mean, he can grapple a little bit, but that's not what he wants to do. He wants to knock your fucking head into the bleachers.
Yeah, and you know it going in. You know that's what he wants to do to you. We just try to – I mean, Izzy was winning that fight and mm-hmm. – he still got him out of there.
Yep.
Well, I couldn't believe it. I remember even saying to the people when we were watching it up in the ESPN desk, we're like, man, could you imagine if he pulls it off here in the end? And he fucking did it.
Yeah, he did it. Izzy was probably ahead three. Well, what? How many rounds do you think he was ahead going into that fifth round?
That was the fifth. And I think even that round was that who? I don't remember now.
Well, Izzy definitely won the first and almost knocked him out.
I think he had probably two or three rounds.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I'd have to go back and try to score it.
Which I'm terrible at, man. People are always like, what did you think? I'm like, I'm calling the fight.
Yeah, you can't call and score at the same time.
They don't get it.
When you're scoring a fight, you should shut your mouth. Okay, here we go. So Izzy had three rounds on Eric Colon's card. On Sal Diamante's card, he had three rounds. And he also had three rounds on Mike Bell's. Yeah, so he had
all the same, too.
All he had to do was move around.
Yep.
All he had to do is move around. Not get caught, and he wins that fight. Wow. I'm very interested in the rematch. Because you got to think, Izzy almost had him out in the first round, man. He almost had him out. If he can avoid getting that leg compromised like he did in the first round of that fight, and so he's got his movement, and he also had some great moments grappling, which surprised a lot of people.
Yeah.
When he had Pajera's back. And
if there's a time that you're going to pull out some grappling, it's in that matchup.
It's with that dude.
And he's been at it longer than Pereira. So it's like that's the time to show. And he did.
Yeah.
Both guys did. Both guys, I think, scored takedowns at one point or another in that fight. I remember being like, oh, now they're wrestlers in here. You know, you get two guys that know they can knock the crap out of each other, and suddenly everybody knows how to do a little bit of wrestling.
Well, just, you know, the mixing it up, just keeping someone guessing, overload their brain.
Yeah, 25 minutes of avoiding that left hook.
Whew.
Scary proposition.
It's everything, man. Everything he hits you with is hard.
And that's what I'm talking about, those lean guys like that. You know those shins hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know if he lands an elbow on you. Same as Izzy.
Mm-hmm.
They're similar build, but Alex has more muscle on him.
He's quite a bit bigger. I mean, I think Pajeda, when he actually weighed into the fight, was above 220.
Yeah.
When he was inside the octagon for the fight, was above 220. Whereas, you got to remember, when Izzy fought Jan Błachowicz for the light heavyweight title, he was only 194.
Yeah.
I mean, Izzy's one of those guys that...
He's not cutting that much weight.
He's not cutting any weight. And even when he wanted to go up to light heavyweight, he's like, I'm not cutting any weight. I'm going to fight as I fight.
Which makes sense. You know, especially if you're not planning on making that transition permanently, you don't want to go and add on all that size. And the other thing that drives me nuts about when I hear these fighters, and I think it's really the strength and conditioning coaches feeding bullshit more than it is the fighters. They're just listening to what they're being told. But you don't put on 20 pounds of muscle in a month. You ever hear these guys in fighter meetings? We'll be talking to them and be like, well, you know, I put on about 10 pounds of lean muscle mass for this camp. I'm like, this particular camp,
in 6
you've
weeks,
put on
10 pounds.
10 pounds of muscle mass.
How are you going to pass your piss test?
Yeah.
What do you? What supplements are you taking for that?
Air quotes supplements.
Like, get the fuck out. You didn't put on 10 pounds of muscle.
Yeah, that's a lot.
You're out of your mind.
Yeah. Yeah, you probably gained some water weight. And it's also, it's like...
You got stronger.
What kind of scanning are they doing of their body composition before they say these things?
Coach doing the eyeball scan saying that you put on 10 pounds of muscle for this one.
Well, you know, I always go back to the Roy Jones Jr. Ruiz fight when he fought John Ruiz. He went up to heavyweight, remember? And
yeah.
He got very muscular. He was real big. He was about – I mean, he wasn't too heavy for a heavyweight. I want to say Roy weighed like 200 pounds, just a little over 200 pounds maybe. See what he weighed for that John Ruiz fight. Does it say?
193.
Oh, was he really? That's all he weighed?
Well, the heavyweight for boxing,
I think that's
is different.
Now
right?
They're saying now he weighs 193. But what did he weigh when he fought John Ruiz? Does it say there? Oh, he said he weighed 193 and Ruiz was 226.
226, yeah.
Interesting. But, you know, Roy was so fucking talented. But when Roy went down in weight and then fought Tarver in his next fight, he looked deflated.
Yeah.
He looked like he had just really drained himself to make that weight cut.
Yeah, that's why you see these guys drop down, man. It
looked terrible and then got knocked out.
Very few people can do it. Jose Aldo, somehow.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Came down and
looked great.
Still looked good.
I think what happened with Aldo is he never really had a serious nutritionist.
Yeah.
Where someone was like planning his meals, breaking it down by calories. And
he was just cutting all that weight
for
the 45. And it's like, well, you could have been a lot smaller way before you even got to that weight cut.
Because I remember when he was at the top of the heap at 145, he was heavy, man.
Yeah, he was
walking around 170.
He was struggling to make those weight cuts. So it's like, and when he said he was going down to bantamweight, it's like, well, how are you going to go down to bantamweight? You used to struggle to make 145 pounds. Yeah. Lifestyle changes.
Yeah, lifestyle changes. And some guys, that's the move. And some guys, you know, it just ruins them because they drain so much out of their body. They're not durable anymore.
Yeah. I've talked to like Nick Zick and Brian Butler, my manager. I'm like, maybe I'll come back on 145. And they're like, yeah. And I talked to Ian Larios, who does all my weight cuts. He's like, are you out of your fucking mind, dude? He's like, just because you're skinnier now doesn't mean you can drop a whole weight class and have no trouble making that weight.
Were you thinking about it at one point in time of doing one more fight?
Oh, man. I've thought about it many, many times.
Did you think about it after Oliveira became the champ? Because when you beat Oliveira...
He was not... Yeah, he... you know, not really, because we're on such different trajectories. It's like... Just because at the time I had a win, which I loved having over him. I loved being the last guy that had beaten the champion, which is no longer the case. But like for me to come back and think I'm going to even come close to getting that matchup, it's like, well, that's not going to happen. I'm going to have to win and beat all these insane, hungry contenders before I even get to sniff at that belt. So
he was an interesting case. He still is an interesting case because... He was a guy who was kind of known as a guy who fell apart.
A quitter a little bit. Yeah.
Cub Swanson knocked him out. A bunch of guys had beat
Max
him.
Max Holloway had like that weird neck thing going on.
What happened to the Max Holloway fight?
Remember he had like a weird stinger almost in his neck, I think. And he kind of just crumbled in the corner and like tapped out. I think it was a legit thing with his
neck. Oh, yeah, I remember that.
It was kind of scary.
I forgot about that. Yeah, man.
But then everybody was calling him a quitter, all this, and it's like...
And he just turned a corner and then became the baddest motherfucker in the weight class.
Yeah.
And not just the baddest motherfucker in the weight class, but one of the best motherfuckers in the sport. When he knocked out Chandler and he beat the shit out of Gaethje, when he was putting it on people, you got to go, God damn, he's good.
I'm curious to see if he comes back and gets back to that Islam fight because he seems to want it. At first, it didn't seem like, I mean, like after you've been there with Islam, I think a lot of people go, I don't know if I want to get back in there right away.
He's on
and then you
another
can think
level.
You think about it for a while.
What does it say here? Oliveira suffered a micro tear in his esophagus. Wow.
And you know what that was probably due to?
He said he's injured his neck in training, but did physical therapy and thought everything was fine. What do you think
it's probably
due to?
All of the weight cuts that he had been doing to make 145 pounds back in the day.
That's right, the 45.
Now, he probably heard it in training legit.
Yeah.
But when you're constantly dehydrating yourself camp after camp after camp. And I remember when he fought me, he was still trying to go back down to 145 pounds.
Jeez.
Which is why he wasn't as big. I mean, I must have been 20 pounds heavier than him when I fought him back then.
And so then he made a conscious decision to stay at 55.
He said, I'm gonna stay here because they told him you have no choice. So, like, you're either going to fight in this weight class or you're going to keep missing and screwing yourself over.
It's crazy
45.
Because his power developed. Like, when he hit Gaethje, Gaethje said no one ever hit him that hard before. He said he felt it in his teeth.
And he, even back in the day when he was still Mr. Skinny Charles Oliveira, and he kicked me a few times, I remember being like, God damn. I thought I was going to buzzsaw through this guy on the feet, and he lands a few shots. And you could see where that strength was there. That, again, another one of those just wiry guys where you kind of underestimate their power, and then they hit you, and you're like, Jesus Christ.
Long, lean. It's a great build for fighting. You look at some of the great fighters of our time, like the long, lean guys.
It's the best build, in my opinion.
Because you have the reach advantage.
The reach, jiu-jitsu, you can wrap everybody up. You can sneak your arms in through your... You're not as bulky, which maybe you don't have as much of that brunt kind of power that some of the guys that are shorter and stockier would have in the division. But I think that long, lean muscle for MMA is the way to be. And I was just short and stumpy. I have no reach. None of those benefits, unfortunately.
Yeah, but then look at Mighty Mouse. He's short and stumpy too, and he's the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
If not the greatest, he's in the conversation. I mean, I don't think there is one real greatest of all time. Khabib is most certainly in the conversation. John Jones.
John Jones, for sure.
John Jones has got the perfect build. Perfect build.
How is that going to translate to heavyweight?
It's very interesting because everybody else has the perfect build up there, too.
Yeah.
It's a different world when you're dealing with natural 245s, natural 260s. Yeah. I was really looking forward to him and Francis.
I think everybody was, man.
Real bummed out when they didn't make that happen.
Yeah,
I think Francis just sees that pot of gold at the end of the boxing rainbow and is like, you know what? I'm going to make some fucking money. And here's the perfect world. The perfect world is he goes over, has some big money heavyweight boxing fight. John Jones and Cyril Gane have a fight. John wins, Cyril wins, whoever wins is the UFC champion, and then they have...
Comes back.
And then Francis comes back.
Yeah,
like,
I'd like
to see
him
come
back.
He can totally come back. He's like, Francis, if you're listening, sir, please
you can
don't,
come back.
Don't sign an exclusive contract. Just go
no,
make some
there's
money.
There's no way, right? He would.
Who knows? If someone comes along and offers him a shit ton of money,
yeah.
Look, I mean, he should. If someone says, hey, I'll give you $100 million.
Yeah, you do whatever.
You yeah, do whatever. You say, okay, what do I got to do? Fight Jake Paul? What the fuck do I have to do? You know what I mean? Like, if they're going to offer him big money. But I think they're trying to do a Tyson Fury fight. I know Tyson Fury was saying a bunch of crazy shit, like, we'll fight in a cage. Four-ounce gloves.
The regular with boxing rules, MMA.
Mike
gloves.
Tyson as the referee. He's
yeah. Why is that like,
for
why
fun? Because I mean, that would be more people would buy it. I mean, that's just getting a bunch of people to buy it. You
make
know?
As much money as they humanly can.
I mean, Tyson. People need to understand the levels of boxing, though. You got to understand. I mean, listen, Francis Ngannou could knock out any human being on earth if he can hit them clean in the chin. But
yeah.
Good luck hitting Tyson Fury clean on the chin.
Bro.
Did you see Floyd Mayweather sparring yesterday?
He made that kid. I don't know who that kid is.
Well, the kid is like a decent boxer.
Yeah.
Decent
and
boxer.
And that just shows you right there. I mean, he was – I just saw it yesterday. I was watching. And he was just – and he was talking.
Playing with
bang,
him. Yeah.
Bang.
Playing
bang.
With him. And moving away from
my
him.
God.
And you know, and the kid, whoever this guy is, I guess he's a YouTuber.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Do you know who he is, Jamie? The kid had an excellent account of himself because even though Floyd was tagging him, he didn't shy away. He kept moving forward. He was just...
And you can't get frustrated. Like the worst thing you can do when Floyd's talking shit to you like that is rush him.
Right.
Because well, you're gonna walk onto a right hand and you're gonna look like an idiot.
So he's still... I mean, he's like 50 years old. I mean, it's amazing. His understanding of where the punches are coming.
Look at that
fucking counter. His understanding of, is that the dude he boxed?
He's talking about the video.
Oh, let's hear him say it. What he said.
Oh. Oh my God, I didn't even see that. That was like a big body shot. Look, it's coming.
And he touched you with that.
Yeah, just touched him.
Oh, Jesus.
That's funny.
If he wanted to take you down with that liver shot, he would have taken you down.
Yeah, easily. He's just tapping him up. But it's that guy's got a great sense of humor about it. It's very funny how he's laughing about it. But, you know, I mean, you got to think, this guy is 50 years old. I mean, how old is Floyd now? He's got to be close to 50.
He's got to be late 40s, 48. Yeah,
late 40s.
Kid was 21.
And at this point in time,
45.
Is he 45?
Sorry, Floyd. I didn't mean
sorry,
to age you.
Sorry, Floyd. But I mean, past his prime and still just making millions of dollars fighting
doing
people that have
fights.
No business. He's really brilliant. What he's doing is brilliant because he gets these guys to fight him. They have no business fighting him. He's making millions of dollars.
Yeah.
He puts on a show. Do you see the one he did? I guess it was in – was it in Dubai? Where he took the ring card and he was walking around in between rounds holding the ring card.
Oh, my God.
He
I
took
didn't
it from
see
the ring
one.
Card girl. He was just having a blast.
I saw the one a while back. He fought that kickboxer kid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
was like the
Tension.
First time he had done
Tension
one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of those like big exhibitions. And it's just like he's just
going
to make you look silly.
Tension fought 126. Like, Tension's a tiny guy.
Yeah.
He's a brilliant kickboxer.
But without kicking.
Yeah, without the
kicking.
You've
got no chance.
I know.
But he might not even have a chance.
He has a chance of kicking. You imagine they let him leg kick Floyd?
That's the only way I'm getting in there. Can I elbow?
How about this?
Can I knee you?
I get 10 leg kicks around.
Give me one.
Right.
Give
one
me
around.
One. Yeah. Yeah. If I land, you know, I don't want to.
Oh, you get those juices flowing again.
Yeah. Let's go. I do, man. It's
hard.
It's a, especially since we do commentary, right? So I'm around these elite fighters all the time, and I try to be respectful, but you can tell sometimes somebody will get sassy or have a comment about what I said, and it's like, man, don't forget that I've been in there too, man. Like, I know everything that's going on there. I've had my ass beat. I've beaten some good dudes. I've never was champion. That's the only thing. Sometimes I feel a little bit of what's the word where you like you feel like you're
imposter syndrome?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, I don't deserve to be there sometimes because you got Dom next to me. He's champ, WEC champ. I got DC's double champ next to me.
Well, what about me? I never even fought MMA.
Yeah, but you're there day one. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's you do a great job. You shouldn't have imposter syndrome. And you are absolutely a legitimate, like, top flight professional fighter. It's just that sport is always going to have sensitive people when, you know, you dedicate your entire life to this one moment, and then someone's criticizing it and saying, oh, he could have done this and he could have done that. Yeah. And they're like, fuck you, Paul Felder.
I've had to take some Joe Rogan lessons on not reading the comments and not doing all that stuff, because
everyone should listen to me about that.
For the longest time, I would get, man, and I'd get into these arguments, and you can't win because you've already lost.
Mm-hmm.
The second you type it in and send it, they just won.
Yeah, you lost right away.
You also lost really letting it get to you is the first loss.
There's nothing at stake, so you can't win anything.
No.
There's no way to win.
Yeah. I'll beat you up, internet guy.
I say that, but then there's Gordon Ryan, who loves to fucking go back and forth with people online.
But does he have fun doing it?
He does.
Okay.
He's a legitimate psycho, though.
But as long as you can enjoy... Yeah, well...
He's a real psycho.
As long as you can enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like, I started to get mad.
He enjoys it. He gets a kick out of it. He doesn't give a fuck. Like, you can't hurt his feelings like that.
Well, because, I mean, you're like, what are you going to do? First of all, where's the trash talk even coming from with a guy like that?
Right.
Like, what are you saying to him?
Right.
Oh, that he's not
won
the best?
50 in a row?
Oh, you can't heel hook everybody?
Shit. You're the greatest of all time. Whatever. You're a beautiful,
suck, bro.
Handsome, tall, good-looking guy built like a Greek god. Fuck
abs.
Off.
Hate your abs.
Yeah. Probably so you can want to suck dick. Yeah, it's an interesting thing, that social media, because I've seen it ruin people's lives. I've seen some fighters, they get into it with people on social media, and they're going back and forth all the time, and I know that's fucking with their head. I know they're probably thinking about that when they're hitting pads or thinking about some mean thing that someone said to them. or someone posts a gif. I remember people used to fuck with Rashad Evans. There was that photo of him when Lyoto Machida knocked him out, and mm-hmm. it was like his eyeballs were rolled back in his head. And some guy came up to him at one
to
of them.
To sign it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he crumpled it up and threw it at him.
Should have just signed it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Like, you got to – you're in there with – you're standing right next to a lion.
Yeah.
Like, how about you watch your fucking mouth? You think you're cute to go up to Rashad Evans and
– put a picture of him being knocked
out? Yeah, you think that's cute? He'll rip your fucking head off your body. How about that?
He's a much calmer man these days, man.
Oh, my God. He's
– so
went
chill
on
now.
Psychedelic journey.
Yeah.
He became a different human.
It's so funny to see him, like, just his energy in the backstage area is just so calm now. And I'm like,
well,
dude, I remember hanging
now.
Out with you. Yeah.
That's what it does it. You turn into a fucking giraffe.
That's the one thing I can't. John Gooden, too. I just can't get on that bandwagon.
I don't think it's good for you. I mean, it might be okay for some people. But it's not. I don't believe it's the optimum diet. And this comes from many, many, many conversations with nutritionists.
Yeah.
And vegans, too, and trying to listen to people that are vegan. You can do it and pull it off, but you have to really be careful, and you have to really mind your macronutrients and really pay attention to what you're taking.
Yeah, because it just seems so easy to take way too much of you know, processed shit.
It's not just that. You definitely could do that, but it's also your body's not absorbing. Like when people go, you can't go one-to-one with animal products versus like broccoli. Like if you say like, oh, I got 25 grams of protein from broccoli. No, you didn't. Because your body's not absorbing it the same.
Yeah, with all that fiber, you're just going to be farting the whole time.
You're
what's going to end up
be
happening.
Farting the whole time. But some people have done it right. They can do it. It can be done right. I just don't think it's the optimal diet. You know, I really believe that red meat. And you know, this is very controversial, but it's backed up by science. It really is. Red meat is one of the most nutrient-dense foods.
Yeah.
And all of our ideas about what's bad and what's good, we've been hoodwinked. We've been hoodwinked by a bunch of fucked-up studies that were conducted by the sugar companies because they paid scientists off to lie about the dangers of saturated fat, and that is just in everyone's consciousness.
Yep.
And then, you know, there's all these people, what about your cholesterol? What about that? What about this? What about that? I get my blood work done all the time. I'm healthy as fuck.
Yeah. And so you know. And you are eating a lot of red meat.
I'm eating mostly meat. All of January, I go on the carnivore diet. I do it every year. Just all January, I eat nothing but meat. I feel fucking
You don't crave
great.
Like, I, well, crave. I guess you do, yeah.
I do cheat. I cheat a couple times.
What's your go-to?
I ate sushi.
Oh.
I had some sushi. That was really good. But it's just rice. I cheated with rice. I cheated
a little bit.
Rice
is my favorite thing on the planet.
I had dessert 3 times this month.
Mm.
Yeah. I had a piece of bread yesterday.
Fuck yeah. I love bread, dude.
I do too. I love it. I had a steak, and I was like, one piece of bread's not going to fucking kill me.
You know what I want after the steak?
What?
Some bread.
Yes. After the steak?
No, I'm just saying. I always want bread now.
Mm. I love bread. Bread with butter. It's fucking goddamn it so good.
You know what?
Warm bread.
Have you ever heard of this? When I was a kid, if we had anything with gravy for dinner, we would do bread and gravy afterwards, right? My dad would go to the kitchen, grab the biggest thing of white bread that we had, put a pile on it. Anybody want some bread and gravy?
We would just
sit there, grab the gravy.
Oh yeah.
Pour it all over bread.
Well, you know, I'm Italian, and my grandparents used to live in this very Italian neighborhood in New Jersey that eventually wasn't Italian, but they had these Italian bakeries, and I'd go walk with my grandfather to this bakery. He'd go to the bakery every couple of days and buy a couple of loaves of bread.
Yeah.
And it was the freshest bread, and you carve into it, and my grandmother would make
Philly,
homemade
New York
pasta sauce.
Yeah.
And oh my God,
that's my
marinara.
Favorite thing in the world.
Oh,
dude.
Dip it in there with butter.
While it's
butter
still
and marinara.
Bubbling away.
Oh.
And you have a side of bread.
Oh.
Slather that with some butter and right into the pot. Almost
right
scold your whole face off, but it's just whatever.
So good.
I'm going in.
So good.
Ugh.
I mean, I know it's terrible for you, but like, look, you're from Philly. A fucking cheesesteak sub.
Yeah, it's not good for you.
A real good one. A real good one with just fucking hot, and you rip it apart at the middle and take a bite into it, and just the crunch of the bread on the outside and the juiciness.
It's the bread. It's the bread, man.
Yeah.
Even our like all the hoagies and stuff like that, you get the like the hard seeded rolls. That's the way to
look
go.
Look at that. Jesus, look at that. That looks
Eat
good.
That, Bilal.
Oh, that looks so
Philly
good.
Philly doesn't suck. Chicago sucks. Go Birds.
Look how good that looks. God, that looks good.
That's what the that's Wiz Wit right there. That's Wiz Wit.
It's funny how Philly became like known for cheesesteaks.
Yeah.
Like that is the food of Philadelphia. Right? If you ask someone like I don't think there's another place like that in terms of like a sandwich that's completely connected to one city.
Yeah.
Name another place.
No.
I can't. I guess.
Like, I get you got Chicago's got the
deep dish.
Like, and what's their? They do like the they do a beef sandwich too in Chicago. Like,
but it's not
as famous as a cheesesteak.
Philly's like synonymous with cheesesteaks.
And Jim's, which was always my favorite spot on South Street, that's just like burned down not too long ago. I don't even think it's back up and running. And then obviously Pat's and Gino's are just like the
kind of touristy,
yeah, I mean
they're still good.
Bro, if it's 3 a.m. and you've been out, and then you go and get it's going to taste amazing.
And
right?
You want to see a brawl.
If you want to see a fist fight.
You're 5 out of 10.
Or be in one. You can, you can go stand in that line.
What's the best cheesesteak in Philly? There's got to be like one best place.
I mean, I always went to Jim's, but everybody would argue. There's a spot in the Northeast. I know the Dawkins brothers would be arguing with me about that, and Sean Brady. But you know what? I don't eat them that often, to be honest with you. When you grow up,
once a year?
No, more than that. When I say I don't eat them very often, I mean like you know every couple months I'll have a cheesesteak. But I'm a pizza guy nowadays.
Every time I watch Dave Portnoy test pizza, I wish I was there with him.
Yeah.
I get so jealous. Like when he's just taking a bite
Meanwhile,
out of the
Meanwhile, you're eating a steak and he's just crushing bread.
Yeah. I mean, it's not good for you. It's not the right way for me, just me personally, when I eat and I feel my best is like fruit and meat.
Yeah.
That's it. And I can eat greens. Greens don't seem to bother me. But the balance for me seems to be fruit and meat. What is this? Which
is this
place
Jim's?
Is
this?
Jim's.
This is Jim's. Oh, that looks good. Oh my God.
I got to make a cheesesteak at Jim's for the UFC.
They really did
a feature when we last they were in Philly.
God,
me and my brother Tommy did a
past.
Hey,
oh,
Barack.
Obama. I mean everybody's.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You get the thing I like about Jim's too on South Street is you can get beers and stuff there. Mm. A lot of them you can't get. They don't want you to get beer because you know
drunks.
It's 3 a.m. and you're gonna
chaos.
You're already trying to fight somebody outside of that place.
It's just funny that how did that happen? Where that became like the known sandwich of Philadelphia?
I don't know. I remember I'd heard how they even got started. I think a guy had some leftover steak. And it was like early in the morning or something. And he threw a sandwich together, and I think that's how they got started making them like that. But I don't know how that became so damn famous with our city that we're known for cheese whiz
about
all
the different
steak.
Food, all the different stuff that people could eat. That one sandwich becomes famous for the city.
We were like the one of the founding the original capital of this nation. And what are we known for now?
Cheese
whiz on.
Well,
on
also known for fights. Fighters. I mean, think about how many Bernard Hopkins, Joe Frazier. I mean, so many great fighters came out of Philadelphia.
Dude, there's a kid
Rocky.
Now. Ennis.
Boots Ennis.
God damn, bro.
God damn, he's good. He's so good.
I remember training with him when he was like a teenager, and he was just playing around with us, and he would just move around. I mean, we were grown adult MMA fighters, couldn't even touch this kid. And now look at he's
so
murdering
slick.
People. The way
he's
just like slides. He basically does like a cartwheel and gets out of the way of some of these shots, man.
He's so slick. He's so slick and creative and so entertaining to watch.
He's so good.
Yeah, he's so good at switching stances and
his footwork and
movement.
Yeah, I see him doing as well as you because he was literally helping MMA guys out with his dad, obviously, Bozy, who's just training him. And I don't know if I think that's who he's training with pretty much full time still is his dad.
His dad still gets after it. Bro, his dad is 67 years old.
Down if need be. I've seen him box like young kids in the gym who start mouthing off, and he's like, "All right, you want to throw down?" Doesn't throw a headgear on, and just he'll bust people up.
Wow,
he's the man. He cornered me for that the spinning hook kick fight. He was in my
really?
Corner.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when you were doing that, did you have an MMA gym, or were you training? Were you cross training on your own, like going to a boxing gym, a Muay Thai gym, a jiu-jitsu gym?
So back then, we at Daniel Gracie's gym in North Philly, we had if you went into our basement gym, there was a like sliding old school door that went into another basement. And, you know, it was just like all old warehouses that were turned into studios like this or boxing gym. And next door to us was a boxing gym.
Wow.
So we started sharing the space. So we would work with Bosey and all those guys and his sons and his who are, you know, he's got other sons who didn't make it the way Boots is now, but they would spar with us, help us out, hold pads for us. So that was kind of just like a little collab that we had going at the time. But
wow, that's fortunate.
It was great.
That's amazing. It was great. That's amazing.
And they would, I remember some of the pro boxers there would just jab, like you'd be trying to beat their asses, and you'd find out after the session that I was just throwing jabs. Like, look, think back. He's like, did I ever hit you with a right hand? It's like, no, you were only jabbing me in the face. And I was trying to take your head off for, you know, six rounds or whatever it was.
And they're just sharpening up tools on you.
They're just working on one thing. Yeah. Or maybe just defense, not even punching you.
Well, that would be a thing that Hicks and Gracie would always do with people. You know, like he would just go for left arm bars.
Yeah.
So he would train with everybody and just like...
That's the best way to do it if you're significantly better than somebody. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, how can I handicap myself so that I'm still working while you're still working?
Yeah.
It's just a good way to train.
Yeah, it's hard for a guy who's that much better than everybody else to get real good, solid work in.
Yeah. Just don't put nobody on that level.
So what was the first... Was Duke's the first... actual MMA gym? I know you did some training with Cowboy too, right?
Yeah, so way back when I was still an amateur, he had like the tap out house back then where he had bunk beds in his own house and he would rent it out and you could just come and experience training with Donald and Leonard Garcia at the time. So I flew out after sparring with him at a seminar and he's like, you know what? You don't even have to pay. Just come out and you can train with us. You can live in the house and be a sparring partner. And then after experiencing that mess of living in bunk beds with these other fighter dudes sharing one bathroom, bro, in the back of his house, because the way they had the ranch set up is Leonard had like this middle area. Cowboy had his own bedroom with a bathroom in the back. And then all of us dudes were just in like four bunk beds.
How many guys were in the house together?
Man, we'd have, there'd be like 10 guys at a time.
Oh my God.
All taking dumps in the same bathroom.
Who was cooking?
Us. For ourselves. Going to Walmart and buying shit. And that's when you realize how back-assed some of these kids are with their diets. It's like, what are you eating? There's Oreos everywhere. It's like little kids. It's like you realize that none of us knew how to even live on our own. And we all started, you started eating cleaner. You started, well, the ones that wanted to be successful would. And, some of these kids would miss weight or they'd be partying and not training. And it's like, dude, you're not here on vacation, man.
Right.
You're here to train. And some guy be in there with Cowboy, get his nose broken. He used to spar 4-ounce gloves, no shin guards, no headgear, just mouthpiece, MMA gloves in his cage at the ranch. And I remember I was always just getting thrown in because he'd wreck somebody. All right, Felder. Philly called me back then. Get Philly in here. And I'd come in and take my ass beating. But I kept coming after him. And he started flying me out. And then I started training with those guys. And then obviously I got my UFC debut. And he's like, get your ass out here. I went out there. I brought my buddy Jonathan with me. And I did that for a while. And then I was like, okay. It was too much. And... It was Cowboy. It was the Cowboy show. Like I needed to find somewhere where I could kind of have my own little bit of a training camp. I could still go and train with him, but I wasn't going to get that attention that
in
I
terms
needed.
Of technique and
now being in the UFC, that's when I was finally like, man, I can't I can't just be a sparring partner anymore. And that's when I started doing my own training camps. And I floated around Daniel Gracie. I worked with Nick Catone and Ricardo and Mark Henry and those guys for a couple fights. And it just, it didn't, nothing against those guys. I love all those guys. But it didn't seem like, it just didn't fit my style. And then my manager at the time, Brian, was like, I want you to go check out Duke and see which. So I flew out there when I was getting ready for Gilbert Burns, which ended up not happening. He broke his arm in that fight. But that's the first time I flew out there. I'd lost to Trinaldo in Brazil. And then I flew out to Duke's and I never left. I stayed there for the entire training camp. Once I met him, once I hit pads with him one time, I was like, that's my guy.
Really?
That's my guy.
Interesting.
Bro, he's like Rain Man of Thai pads and Thai knowledge. He's so damn good.
With oh, he's a wealth Muay Thai. Of knowledge. Yeah. Yeah.
He'll tell you all about it, too.
Yeah. I mean,
bro, you,
he Duke, knows a lot.
You want to hear about it? Duke will friggin' talk yeah. to you about it. I love
well,
that.
You got to think of him and his brother. I mean, they were at the forefront of kickboxing. You know, when his brother, I forget who that Thai guy whose brother fought.
Yep.
But when his brother was the king of kings in kickboxing, then he fought that Thai guy, and that Thai guy chopped his legs apart. And then Duke, who was 19 at the time, was like, well, I don't think there's any talent in kicking legs.
And then he's like, I'm never going to let that happen. That was the moment when he was like, oh.
Yeah.
I guess there is something to this stuff. And then he became obsessed with it.
I remember the first time I found out about Muay Thai. I was training in Boston, and I was training with this I was running this Taekwondo school, and I was working with this boxing trainer. And this boxing trainer had this other guy who ran a karate school in Everett, Rich Vasipoli. Great fucking guy. He died actually doing a triathlon. He got kicked. Jeez. He got kicked in the head
while swimming.
He was swimming, and he got knocked out. I guess. Yes, this is the fight.
Look, so, he just doesn't even know what to do.
Yeah, and well, also Rick had him hurt. He had him hurt and dropped him
because he could punch, man. Rick,
oh my god, he could do everything. Rick could do everything, and he was so clever. Like his kicking and everything was so slick. But this motherfucker was just chopping him down,
just marching forward,
just chopping him down. And he just brutalized his legs. And Rick didn't react to it at all. He didn't know what to do.
Yeah, there it is.
He hurt him. He hurt him bad. When he said, was it a high kick?
He kicked into the left hand.
Oh, yeah. So he kicked him and then threw left hand.
Bam.
Boom, yeah.
Almost like a Superman punch.
Yeah. With one leg up, caught him on the chin.
Is that blood or his mouth guard?
Mouth guard.
All right.
So he puts his mouth guard back in. I mean,
round one.
I mean, very, very interesting moment in striking because.
Oh,
look, you heard him again. He tags him, drops him a second time in the round. Like, he had him in real fucking trouble. And this dude gets up, and Rick had some fucking hands. I mean, he had amazing kicks above the waist and eventually developed great kicks below the waist. But this Thai guy just kept fucking chopping the legs. And I think this fight was a fight. How do you say his name? Chang Puek Kiet Song Grit.
I don't know. You need Duke
Good
to
luck.
Pronounce
yeah.
that one.
Or Mark Delgrate could probably do it. But so he had this dude in all kinds
Mark
of trouble.
Definitely could.
Well, Mark can actually speak Thai.
Yeah.
It's wild watching him speak Thai because he's
you see this
fucking
guy from
Boston,
Boston
accent,
yeah.
fucking Italian guy, you know, and he's speaking Thai.
Oh.
Yeah, look at that. Jump spinning back kick to the head at the end of the first round. So this dude is getting his ass handed to him in the first round and then comes back in the second and just starts fucking marching him down and chopping those legs. Hey, you can go right there. Just go right there. You can get a sense of it. But we got a sense of like, oh, this is crazy. Like he's taking away his ability to move, and he's taking away his ability. Ooh. I mean, he's just thumping those shins.
You can
into
see it right
thigh.
There. Yeah. That one right there.
Man,
he's already not
liking
moving
it.
Right.
Yeah, not liking it. And it opened up a lot of people's eyes. And I want to say, shit, what year was this?
Oh, God.
I mean, does it say? 88. Wow. So no one even fucking understood Muay Thai outside of Thailand back then. I mean, there was a few guys, but most people did not know what Muay Thai was about. So this is when I first found out about Muay Thai. And I had heard about this fight, and because I was a giant fan of Rick Rufus, and this was on PKA Karate, it was on ESPN. And I started training, and I started training with guys who were going over to Thailand and fighting. There was this one dude that I knew who went over there for months and months at a time. And this is in 88 or 89. This guy was going over to Thailand and training and coming back with all these stories and fucking cuts all over his forehead from
mangled.
Elbows. Yeah. But it was very eye-opening. The elbows were very eye-opening, like, because I hadn't thought about that as like an in-tight weapon that would work alongside with boxing. And then the leg kicks. And just I remember being stunned at how effective leg kicks are. Just it's so amazing.
Yeah.
Like watching that fight, it's like, wow.
And I remember being a little kid, and I obviously grew up doing martial arts. And I remember a couple people, even when I was just starting doing Taekwondo and Karate, people being like, you should do Muay Thai. Mm. But even then, I remember, you know, as a kid, I was born in 84. So I was four when Rick was getting his ass handed leg kicks like that. But
that's crazy.
Even when I was a kid, people were like, no, you should do Muay Thai.
Isn't that crazy?
It was like dangerous.
You were
four. Yeah.
I was 21. I'm so old. It's wild. It's wild thinking back to those days because I was at a time where martial arts had started to kind of – like that was the first time striking styles merged where you saw like the above-the-waist kickboxing, which is what most of the people did in America – and
versus
then Muay Thai.
Yeah.
And Muay Thai was so much more effective. But if you had those above-the-waist style kicks and
– and you can kick the legs?
Oh, my God. Yeah. But no one knew what to do with front leg side kicks. I remember that when I was kickboxing. I was like, no one knew what to do with that. It was weird. Like you would stand sideways, and they didn't know how to handle that.
Yeah, you can't get in.
If you were really good at it. There was this guy, Larry Jones, that I used to train with. Larry was 6'2", and he was all legs. It was crazy. His legs went up to here. I never saw anybody built like him. He had the torso of a 5-foot man, and he had these legs that were incredible. Incredible dexterity. And he would sidekick the fuck out of everybody. And you just couldn't get close to him.
Yeah.
You try to move forward, and he went, foop, foop.
Yeah, you could have the best hands in the world.
Slide. Like a lot of those point fighter guys. Like there's a guy named Mafia Holloway. Do you know who he is?
Mm-mm.
He was a guy. He was the first guy. I fought a couple of those point tournaments just for fuck around. I wasn't a point fighting guy, but I would do it every now and then. And I fought him in a point fighting tournament. And I remember being so baffled. Like what to do because I was used to continuous. The Taekwondo fights were continuous.
He would just swap.
Tap me, and I was like, oh, wow. I was like, this is something I need to learn how to do. And I remember thinking that when MMA started emerging, I was like, that is an unseen skill, the ability to point fight. And then Venom Page came and showed everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Venom Page was the first guy that was like a really good point fighter that made his way into MMA. I'm like, there's
Wonder Boy as well.
Yeah. But Wonder Boy was a kickboxer.
Yeah.
Wonder Boy did a lot of, you know, above-the-waist kickboxing, and he was fucking phenomenal at that.
Yeah, his record's like crazy.
57-0 or something crazy like that. I mean, Wonder Boy is like, but that fight with Kevin Holland, that let everybody know, like, you just want to stand up with Wonder Boy.
You're in trouble.
No threat of the takedown at all. Wonder Boy is a bad man.
He's a bad man. He's just going to have fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even if you hurt him, it's like, don't forget this dude came from a, he's been hurt before on the feet.
Oh, he knows how to handle it.
As long as you're not going to follow it up with a whole bunch of wrestling and stifle him, he's stand and do that all day long.
And his ego is so healthy. He's such a nice guy.
He's the nicest
guy. Like, it's almost like he's congratulating you for hitting him.
Yeah.
Like, good job.
Man,
like,
got past my defenses there, buddy. Good job.
Well, he does some wild shit, too. Like, he sneaks that round kick over the shoulder onto the face.
I think that's the kick that made him, I mean, that knockout that he has.
First UFC fight. Yeah.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
And he just kind of throws it.
Whoop, yeah. Comes well, right I remember Firas Sahabi saying that he was the best striker they had ever seen. Yeah. They brought him in to train with George St. Pierre.
Yes.
And this was when Wonder Boy was in his 20s.
Yeah.
Wonder Boy was a motherfucker. I saw him fight live.
Can I get some of this call?
Yeah, sure. Push that down. I saw Wonder Boy fight live at Chuck Norris's event. Remember Chuck Norris?
Yes. Dude, I used to watch that all, because that was in the prime of I'm still doing taekwondo and doing all that, and I'm like, that's what I want to do. Because it was kickboxing.
See,
but
you
it was
can
in,
find
like,
some
weird,
of the Wonder
what was that
Boy,
called?
I think it was World Combat League.
I think you're right.
I think that's what he called it. But I went to see it. I believe it was in Atlantic City, and it was the first time I met Chuck Norris. I was like, oh my God, it's Chuck Norris. I couldn't believe I was meeting Chuck Norris, and he knew who I was. I was like, oh my God, I could die
Chuck
now.
Chuck Norris.
It's like Chuck Norris knows my name. He came and gave me a hug. I was like, holy shit, Chuck Norris gave me a hug. But this is Wonder Boy when he was in his fucking prime, man. Like, and so there was what we're looking at is, for people that are just listening, there's a round platform, and it bevels up on the sides slightly. So instead of having a barrier, there's like an area, the red area, like a yellow area, like the danger track, and then the red where it goes, it slants up. And so you know to move around it, which I think was a brilliant idea. And I want to say that – I want to say Frank Shamrock was like one of the first guys to use something similar to that in MMA. He had an organization that he was doing
for
a while. Yeah.
Well, dude, it goes back – even think of Bloodsport, right, when they – at the final match.
Right.
They turn up the canvas so that they're forced – to the middle. I mean, that's basically the concept.
It's a good concept. I like the concept. The concept of having like a curved surface that, but the problem with the MMA guys is you can't have that because guys will drive people over the side and slam.
You'll be running into that
ground.
Guy with the camera right there.
See, he caught him with that same kick over the shoulder. He was so good at sneaking that front round kick over the shoulder and like catching you on the chin. Doc
Hamilton.
That guy
doesn't have any idea what hit him.
No, he has no idea. Doc Hamilton, that referee, he was one of the first guys to develop an alternative scoring system. He had an alternative scoring system to the MMA scoring system. Like, you know, because we still have this 10-point must system that I think is very ineffective, or not ineffective, but not comprehensive enough for all the skills and all. It's like with boxing, you could use the 10-point system is great for boxing.
Yeah.
Because you're just using hands, you could see who won 10-9 this guy. But once you start using takedowns,
that's where it gets so complicated, man.
It's
There's
so
too
hard.
Many things.
Too many things.
Because what do we end up arguing about? Well, or people in general about the fights. Well, he got the takedown and the control and landed X, Y, and Z. Yeah, but he threw up 3 submission attempts from his back.
Right.
Or he got taken down 3 times, but the other guy got up 3 times. So it's like,
right.
It's so freaking hard to score.
Yeah, and it's very subjective. It's very subjective. And I understand guys will tell you, no, we count this, we count that. I understand how you're scoring it.
How you're supposed to score it.
But I still don't think that that's comprehensive enough. I don't think we should have a 10-point system. I think it should be like almost like the amount of strikes landed versus plus the amount of hard strikes landed plus takedown attempts. It should be like – it should take like 5 minutes to fucking score each round.
It should almost be looked at in segments, right? Well, okay, who won the striking?
Right.
So-and-so. Who won this? And then you evaluate, well, maybe that was even. And that's the idea, right? That's what the judges are now supposed to be trying to do is view it where they start with the striking. But that's the problem is that if you win the striking, you win the round.
Right. Unless based on. But takedowns, like some people score takedowns very heavily. So takedowns and control.
And it's not supposed to be that way. It's supposed to be just a change in position if you don't do anything with it. So if you get it, let's say I take you down and I don't throw any strikes, but somebody from their back.
Yeah, and someone's throwing up submission
I'm just glad
attempts.
That I don't have to do it. To be completely fair, I would not do well. And everybody's like, you guys should be doing the judges, former fighters. I'm like, no way. I already get enough criticism. I certainly don't want to be the guy that's then judging these things. We get enough trouble when we say who we think won in a fight.
But I think at least it would be coming from a place of knowledge. I mean, it could be subjective and it could be argued and debated, but at least no one can say you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Whereas there are problems with judges where
they're not
like,
martial artists at all.
Right, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. That's like me judging soccer. Like, I don't. Like, what? How the fuck are you a martial arts judge and you're not
like
even a martial artist?
Watching a cricket match.
I remember there was a moment.
I would have no idea.
In the middle of a fight in the early days where someone was doing a Kimura and one of the judges asked someone else, what is he doing? And I was like, this is so crazy. That judge just asked, what is he doing? Yeah. and this person is responsible for the trajectory of someone's career.
Yeah.
Like, this person has dedicated their entire life to this moment.
What's a Kimura?
What's a good thing? You go like this. I mean, imagine you. Imagine if you heard that. If you like got a guy in a Kimura and you're like you're stepping your leg over the head and you're trying to finish it. And, like, what is he doing? What is he doing? What are you doing?
Like, you are watching.
Why are you here?
Mixed martial arts.
How'd you get that spot? Yeah.
Don't know. They're like, what?
It's kind of there's parts of it that are kind of bush league still, and I just don't think we should have that scoring system. I think someone should sit down and develop and that's what Doc Hamilton tried to do. He tried to develop, I believe Doc called it a half-point system. And he and I talked about it. We had a conversation. He explained it to me, and I said, that definitely sounds better than what we're doing.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Something.
I also think they should be fighting on a football field.
I know. You still really want that fantasy.
Fuck that cage. The cage just gets in the way. And
guys know how to fight. In the cage.
Oh, yeah.
Completely.
They know how to use it. They know how to put their back against the cage to get back up.
Like, if the UFC suddenly threw ropes out there, people would be like, what?
Right.
I don't know how to fight anymore because you're so used to takedowns on the fence.
Well, if you go to Pride, ropes are not the way either because guys would get caught up in the ropes and push
dragging them back. I'm like, this isn't good either.
That's not good either. I think not even a platform, just like a flat surface. But –
like a basketball court.
Yes, like a basketball. If you can play basketball in a court, why can't you have an MMA fight in a court?
No mats? Or you like the idea
of having mats?
Because then you're just going to break bones.
Yeah, you break bones. And also head kicks. When guys go down, their head bounces off.
Yeah.
I fought in a lot of basketball courts in the Taekwondo days.
Yes. Yeah, me too.
To the point where they made guys wear pads just on the back of their head.
Just because if you got head kicked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the bounce. That's one of the scariest things is the bounce.
Is this the multiple people fighting?
Not quite.
Oh, is this basketball?
MMA and three-point basketball.
I did see that one.
And the guy slid. Oh, my God. So they're barefoot and they broke the glass. Leave it to Russia. Russia will have like fat men fighting fit women. They'll have
car
two
fighting.
On one.
Did you see car jiu-jitsu? Did you see that?
They have car MMA, too. Russia's so crazy. They're so crazy with the shit they invent.
Habib basically made this up.
Yeah. But look at this guy.
Why would you do that, bro?
Shatters it. Because he's being funny. That's so dumb.
And there's no way that's 10 feet.
No, definitely not.
Right?
No. No, of course not. No, that's not a real... So now the guy gets the ball and the other guy takes him down. Are they allowed to hit him? Doesn't seem like they're hitting each other.
To be honest with you, I don't know if there's many rules to this, but...
But it's in a cage and they're playing basketball? This is this is dumb.
They just taped the glass back together. That's all.
So they're scoring points, but they're not. It's just in an octagon.
And I have seen that thing that Khabib and his friends do. That's become almost I don't know if it's a real sport, but I've seen like organized versions of it now.
It looks fun when you watch Khabib and his buddies training.
They just don't dribble, right?
Yeah, they're just running and holding onto the ball.
It's like, guys, the whole point of the sport is it's difficult because you got to dribble the ball.
Yes.
Like, NBA is already pushing the boundaries on traveling and walking and all that.
But they take each other down on the fucking hardwood floor. Rug ball, they're calling
it. That's what it's called,
So this is a different version of it. Oh, my God.
This is legit.
Brutal.
Make it. Oh, it's got a good shot.
Not a bad shot. Rug ball is a mix of basketball and wrestling. Oh, Jesus Christ.
And but where? Created floors, in where? Russia.
Animals. There's some tough-ass fucking people. If you think now about the amount of top-flight talent that comes from Eastern Europe and Russia and Dagestan and Chechnya, you know? I mean, fucking A, man.
Dude, they're all just waiting to take all the titles at this point, too.
I mean even in boxing. Did you see the Beterbiev fight?
No.
Oh, my God. Beterbiev is so fucking tough. 19-0, 19 knockouts. I mean, what the fuck, man?
Yeah, they're definitely a step ahead in terms of combat sports, whatever it is, whether it's boxing, wrestling, MMA. Yeah. They've got
Yeah, I mean, he's such a fucking animal. He's from Chechnya. And he's 38 years old, so it's like he's got to get like the big fight. He was one of the guys that they were talking about Canelo fighting at light heavyweight, and I would have loved to see that. because I think his mauling style, because he just fucking comes forward and he forces firefights. It's very different than most world champions in that, like, he gets in slugfests and he gets hit, but he's super skillful. He lost to Usyk in the Olympics. Maybe it was the Olympics. It was certainly in the amateurs, but, you know, top flight amateur. And a destroyer as a professional, 19-0. And Yard, man, credit to Yard, because Anthony Yard is a bad man. And he's a fucking tough dude. He took some horrible shots in this fight. But Beterbiev just never stops, just constantly coming forward. And his technique is fucking flawless. I would have loved to see him versus Canelo.
But, yeah, because they're both in that. I mean, Canelo is another one that's just right in there, but ready for it.
Beterbiev is so much bigger. He's a big guy, man. Canelo is, you know, started his career. I mean, fought Floyd at 152, fought at 154. I mean, he's certainly a legit 160, and 168, he's great at it. But this dude is a legit 75. It's a different world. And Beterbiev, 19-0 with 19 knockouts. So he's going to fight Dmitry Bivol next, supposedly, hopefully. And that's a really interesting. But again, Bivol, Russian. This guy, Chechnyan. That fucking world over there, dude. Hard people.
Grow up different, man.
Yeah.
Like, they're not growing up with tons of money. And yeah. These guys are living on cliffs in the middle of, like, rock villages, you know what I mean? Where they're kicking stones in each other for fun. Like, it's true. That's going to breed just. And then you take them and it's like, well, hey, you could do that. You can kick that rock around, or you can come in this gym and learn how to fight. And it's like, that sounds a lot more. You could play basketball where you tackle each other.
Yeah.
Sign me up for that. I'd have been good at that sport. Just not the dribbling part.
Well, you think of, like, war-torn Chechnya. I mean, that's where Khamzat Chimaev comes from. That's where Beterbiev comes from. I mean, it's just when you're
it's an escape. To be able to go and box and fight and do MMA. And now he's living in Sweden and stuff like that. Oh, man.
I know,
gets
right?
to talk trash and be cool. Like,
being around nice people.
Yeah. It's like, nobody's trying to kill me right now.
Yeah, that. If I mean, you think about some of our greatest fighters in America grow up in poor neighborhoods.
Yeah.
These guys grow up in war-torn poor neighborhoods.
Yep. It's even levels to that, right?
Yeah, I mean,
our best
that.
Guys, you come from rough neighborhoods. I grew up in a rough neighborhood, but I didn't grow up in Chechnya.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? South Philly's.
Think about like what you've got now with like Nurmagomedov. He steps down, but then you have Umar. Umar,
he looks great, man.
Fucking phenomenal. Completely different style.
Yep.
Like
just
evil
accidentally
striker.
Knocked out a guy now too.
Oh my god,
that was
sick.
And then he felt bad about it. He was like holding his head. I'm like, well,
such a good guy, right? Like,
it's awesome to see, but
KOs him, and then after follow up shot, he's like, "Oh, you're
shit,
you're
sorry,
out."
I didn't know you were sleeping.
And then you have Islam, who I mean, how the fuck does that guy make 155? When you stand
big,
next
man.
To him, he's so big. He looks like he's 200 plus pounds.
Yeah, he was knocking on my door when I was fighting for the longest time too, and I was like, "These guys are all coming, man."
Yeah, they're all coming.
Rachmanov at 170.
Oh, Shavkat.
Shavkat's
and he's fighting. He's fighting Jeff Neal, which is very interesting. That's a good fight.
I hope they stand because that's. I mean, if you let Jeff Neal have fun on the feet, that guy can kickbox, man.
Oh, he's so accurate.
He's got that good
that
kick.
Mike Perry fight. Woo! That high kick, that left high kick. Woo!
Mike Perry's a maniac.
He is a maniac. Do you know he's the backup for Jake
Paul?
Yeah,
I saw that. I thought, you know what? Good for you, Mike Perry.
Yeah, good for him. Here's Shavkat.
He can do it all, man.
He can do it all. Such a good grappler and elite striker. Throws a lot of spinning kicks.
I called a couple of his early fights, and even then, it was like, this guy's going to be contending for the belt.
The thing about Shavkat is he's not getting the shine that he deserves. You know, like, I don't think people understand how good he is right now in terms of, like, his overall popularity.
Yeah. You know, that's the problem with a lot of these guys. That's why they get slow played the way they do. It's not talent. I mean, these guys are the future of the UFC, no doubt about it. But you got to realize that the UFC's, I mean, they're trying to promote things, right?
Right.
It's hard to promote when a guy's just stoic like that. And it's like, listen, I'm not telling you to change anything, but you can see both sides. I'm like, okay.
Once they get to be a champion though, then it's okay.
Yeah, because it's like, just like good luck.
Khabib.
Yeah. Good luck trying to beat this guy. Now the story is who the hell is going to beat this guy?
to this day, one of my favorite moments at a weigh-in is Khabib before the Conor fight, where he says to the audience, "I'm gonna smash your boy."
Yeah. And he did.
And he did. But it was just, that was like Khabib trash talking, which you never heard.
Yeah.
You never heard. But Conor brought it out of him.
That's all he needed. Yeah. That little bit.
Yeah. Alhamdulillah, I'm going to smash your boy.
Yeah.
And all the Irish people are like, no, like, no, yeah. no.
Yeah, there's not enough proper 12 in the world to to stop that dude from smashing you.
Yeah. It's such an exciting time in terms of like the possibilities and the matchups. I was very surprised that they decided to do Islam Makhachev versus Volkanovski.
Right away, too.
Right away. Yeah. Like very surprised.
You know, to the point where Volk is facing off with him that night.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, that's a big fight, though. We're going to do a fight companion for that. So that's on the 11th. What else is on the card? Yair Rodriguez and Josh Emmett.
Woo! Dude, Jack Della Maddalena,
that kid
is unbelievable,
crack.
Bro.
He's good. And by the way, Rude Boy Randy Brown is a test,
that's
too.
Great. That's a great fight.
Yeah.
That's a great fight.
Randy Brown is long and tall and very, very talented.
That's a true... He's got a true test on his hands now.
I like that fight a lot. That's
good for Randy, too, because especially going down there. If he goes down there and he beats Jack, shit, man. Then he can be like, all right, next fight, I want something big at home. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you almost have to do that in UFC. These young guys got to realize that sometimes. Like, you want X, Y, and Z. You want the big fights. You want these matchups. Sometimes you got to suck it up and say, all right, who do you got to give me? Where do I got to go? Because it's not always going to be sunshine and rainbow. Sometimes you got to go fight in Brazil against a Brazilian. Sometimes you'll have to go over the, down to New Zealand or go over. I remember fighting all over the place. I didn't give a shit as long as it was going to put me in a position to move up the rankings and, get more money as well.
If you went to fight in Brazil, how much time would you give yourself to adapt?
Well, I would do it all different than what I did when I did do it, because I only went. I think I went down, like, it left on like a Tuesday to fight on a Saturday.
Oh, no.
And it was not good.
It's so hard just to adapt to the jet lag.
Yeah, I was a mess for that one. I was a mess for when I fought Edson the second time in Abu Dhabi. I left on Monday to go fight on Saturday night. And I don't think I slept more than 3 hours every night. And I had the worst weight cut of my life because of it. I remember calling my mom, then like after I had made weight, and I don't remember much of that conversation with my mom. And that's when she was like, "I want you to seriously consider not doing this anymore."
Oh my God! Imagine that's your boy. You're talking to your son. Your son's about to fight in a cage fight, and he can barely talk.
Yeah,
because he's cutting weight.
There's a couple of those situations with the weight cuts, man. The 5 day notice fight with RDA was. Yeah, I remember calling Christine, who's, we're married now, but at the time I don't even think we were engaged. And I remember making her, can you go in the fridge and get a can of Coke and pour it over ice for me just to watch it? That's how thirsty I was. I wanted to watch her pour a can of Coke.
God.
This is now, granted, this is like 12:30 in Vegas. So it's like 3 a.m. back home. I wake her up to pour soda over ice for me.
She must be like,
Joe,
what kind of fucking maniac am I getting involved with?
I found ASMR videos of people drinking sodas. You could probably pull that up.
Oh God.
Chugging ice cold soda. So they have the microphone like right on their throat. So you can hear them gulping these ice cold sodas. Now you gotta realize I cut like 18 pounds or something crazy, and I'm dry heaving in the bathtub and just watching all night. Because Butler, my manager, for a while was, they're making sure I was okay. Is this?
Here
yep.
This video is 10 million views.
It's 10 million views.
Chewing
oh,
ice.
Dude, so you can imagine. You're thirsty. God. You're so thirsty. I just want to be this guy. Oh, he's going to drink it out of the bowl.
He's pouring Fanta into a bowl filled with ice.
It just sounds... And he's going to chug it. He's going to slurp it all down.
Is that blueberry Fanta?
I don't know, but
I didn't even know there was a blueberry
Fanta. Blue raspberry?
Oh, wow. He's going to slurp it?
Oh.
How weird is that that's a thing, that people love ASMR?
I didn't know. I still don't watch any ASMR, but at the time, I couldn't stop watching it. I didn't sleep 1 hour the night that Thursday into Friday, we did the whole weight cut. I still had like a pound that I was hoping to float, which I did end up doing. But the whole night, I was 156 and a half or whatever I was. And the whole entire night, I had a severe headache, was dry heaving and watching stuff like that.
Isn't it so insane that fighters will literally get to death's door
the
24 hours
before you fight?
Crazy.
25 minutes.
If there's a thing that I could take away from fighting to eliminate, that would be the thing. Because I feel like it's sanctioned cheating. I feel like that's what it is.
It's 100%. I mean, it's what you're doing.
It's 100%. You're
not know
really
that you have to weigh 155. Yeah. I would walk into the cage 182 pounds.
That's so nuts. So nuts.
But you pay a price for that.
Yeah. And if out of all the things that you've done, that's the one thing that you think you would do differently?
Oh, man. And the reason that I keep talking, you know, I've thought about a comeback and we've kind of teased it. And everybody, even the coaches around me, the reason they'd be interested is because we want to see what I'd be capable of being a healthy, fit. If I could mix now how I've learned to train my system with the triathlon training and having my triathlon coach, this guy David Tilbury Davis, who I work with, he's super science on everything, right? Breaking things down, the mitochondria and how you got to do zone one works versus this. If I could mix that in with my MMA training and start applying that to grappling and sparring days, because you start thinking about athletes, the best athletes in the world, and how they prepare and then how they go and fight. We're so ass backwards in fighting, it makes no fucking sense. We're just beating the shit out of each other and then showing up and hoping for the best on fight day. There needs to be much. You're seeing more of it now where people are being a little more scientific with the approach. But, I mean, I would just, for me, when I was go hard all the time. Five-minute rounds, then five-minute rounds in the bag, then five-minute rounds of jumping rope, go to bed, eat 200 calories, wake up, do it all over again. And it's like, oh, no wonder by 4 weeks into training camp, I wanted to, you know, I didn't want to fight anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, well, now,
if
you know.
But what do you think you would try to weigh now to get down to 55?
Like right around where I'm at now, like 170-something.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I could easily be walking around, as I am now, all the time, well below 180 pounds.
Well, look at Frankie. Frankie won the title. Frankie was basically cutting no weight when he beat BJ.
He's probably eating to even weigh 155 pounds.
I mean,
back
look,
then.
He ends his career at 35, which is pretty wild. You think that he was a champion at 55
and fighting guys like Ben Henderson, who was
Gray Maynard.
He was just solid, man.
Gray Maynard was a big fella.
He was big back then.
He was a big fella.
I mean, now, but even think now, like compared to the lightweights now, he's not even that big.
No. No, some of the light. Well,
imagine Makhachev. Yeah. I mean,
Makhachev is so big.
Who else is a massive
and his
lightweight?
Fucking squeeze. I mean, what is his squeeze like?
You see his back when he got that arm triangle on Charles. Just the traps and all that.
I mean,
you can tell when a guy like Charles taps as fast as he did to that. You know that guy's got just a gorilla grip. Like,
well,
crazy.
His squeeze was evident in the Drew Dober fight, too, because Drew Dober's he's a gorilla, too.
And he's as tough as they come.
Yes.
Look at some of these comeback fights that he's had recently.
That
last fight.
With Bobby Green? Holy shit.
He was styling on him.
Yeah,
and it's
Bobby
like,
Green
bro, you can't sleep on Drew for a second, though.
Nope. Drew caught him.
That was one of the fights I always thought I was going to have,
Drew's,
it never turned out.
His chin is like a fucking fire hydrant. He's such a giga Chad. Like the way he's built,
right?
Fucking giant head.
He's a guy in college. If we were in college together, I would have hated that dude.
So
I'm like, look at this pretty boy. He's so handsome. I hate him. He's got abs.
Beautiful hair.
Strong.
Handsome,
great hair.
Seems like a nice guy. Fuck.
Yeah, right? Got everything going for him. He must be a piece of shit.
Well, I think he's, I think that Makhachev fight ignited something in him as well.
Yeah.
I think when you get the rub, when you fight someone who's that good and you realize, okay, everything
there's another level.
I got to ramp it up.
Yeah.
Sometimes people don't realize what those levels are, which is why being around elite fighters is so critical for a fighter's early day.
Mm-hmm.
Because you mirror the people that you're training with.
Yeah.
You know, if you are in a gym filled with elite assassins, like, you are forced to be at that level.
Look, or you go home Dagestan. And you don't come back. You know what I mean? You just stop. But if you keep showing up.
Bilal's depiction of what it was like to train with Khabib and be in that camp with them and what those guys do, he goes,
they're crazy.
Yeah. But that's why they're so good.
He'd be like, we'd get done these, you know, he told you, these epic sessions, and then Khabib would be like, all right. And then he takes him for another, like, 25 minutes just grinding on him after the fact.
Yep.
He was like the warm-up
sometimes.
He's like, we got a workout. That's not the workout?
Yeah.
You know, crazy. Push, burnout push-ups and stuff at the end, too. Planks squats and planks.
Yeah. But that's what it takes.
You know, it was interesting talking to, we talked to Dan Ige before his last fight. And he loves strength and conditioning, right? And I did too when I was a fighter. And he felt very conflicted because you've got a guy like Khabib who's telling him, you don't need that stuff. You need to just do what he's doing. But what Dan realized, and I think if you saw his last fight, something clicked in him. And I think he's starting to trust himself. You can't always just emulate just because somebody's the greatest ever. And what works for Khabib is not necessarily going to always work for you. And he was like, I needed to do strength and conditioning. I needed to do this stuff. Because he was trying to just do what other people were telling him to do for the longest time. And he was kind of falling short.
Well, George came to that conclusion too. George St. Pierre came to that conclusion. He decided at some point in time that strength and conditioning wasn't important.
Yeah.
And what was really important was efficiency. Mm-hmm. And just technical proficiency, strategy, and efficiency in movements.
Yeah.
In his martial arts movements. I mean, but obviously, you're talking about a guy like George who's already an Adonis.
Yeah.
You know, he's already very strong. And, you know, so he had this physical strength already. And to enhance that and make himself even stronger is not really going to improve his fighting. What really was improving his fighting was just technique and efficiency.
Yeah, and getting better at fighting stuff. Yeah, and you're going to gain strength specific for fighting by grappling.
I mean,
you can't get some of those muscle groups the way that you need to get them to fire. The only way to do that is to just freaking get that squeeze. And you can do that all day. You know, you can pull on the bands and you can simulate a lot of that stuff, but there's nothing that's ever going to replace trying to control somebody with your legs and their upper body, and at the same time control your breathing and heart rate and try to then squeeze. It's just it's unlike anything else.
Eddie Bravo used to always explain it like tying your shoes. He's like, you got to get a technique down to the point where you do it automatically.
You don't even
when
think
you
about
tie
it.
Your shoes, you don't think about tying your shoes.
Nope.
You just go, and you tie your shoes. He's like, that has to be how your technique comes out. You can't be like consciously thinking about it while you're applying it.
Yep.
And if you can get it to that point, and then it's obviously when you're drilling it and executing constantly over and over again, you know, some guys just have a technique. You remember Paul Sass?
Yeah.
He had a triangle from hell.
Mm-hmm.
That motherfucker triangled everybody, and everybody knew. Stay out of his triangle. Didn't matter.
Yeah.
He just had this, in that movement, he had that movement down so tight and so fluid.
That no matter what.
That if you were in his guard, just pop, he would just slap that motherfucker on you.
I mean, look at Khabib and Islam, and you know they're going to try to take you down.
Right.
Good luck.
Yeah. Can't stop
they it. Don't, and they don't hide it. I'm going to take you down and smash you, and I'm going to choke you out.
Smash. Okay? Yeah. And he did it over and over and
over
again.
He's just going to do it.
Yeah. I mean, who's been more dominant in their career? Because, like, he arguably lost a round versus Conor. And he had that difficult fight with Gleison Tibau early in his career.
Yeah.
That was a close fight.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, just a smash fest.
And you know a guy's dominant when you talk about, wow, so-and-so lasted five rounds with him.
It's like, I know, right?
Yeah, he got crushed.
Yeah.
But he lasted. Ally Quinta.
Yeah.
Tough as shit. Talked about that.
Ally Quinta gave a great account of himself.
Got that fight over me.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I remember that.
Yeah.
That was one of those weird ones where they told Max Holloway to stop cutting weight.
Yeah.
That was New York.
Yeah, dude. They had all kinds of stuff going on to make him make weight. They had that room turned into like a furnace. I swear to God, they were bringing up like butane heaters and shit into the room. The hotel, they're just trying to hide it all from the hotel lobby in New York, but they're bringing up all this stuff, all these heated blankets, all this stuff. And I remember talking to those guys back then. I think he was going to make weight, but the doctor, once he saw all that, he's like, I can't.
Well,
I can't allow
this
anymore.
The doctors, if they saw that doctor saw everyone make weight, they'd stop it.
Yeah.
This is what Hamzat said. Hamzat said he would have made weight. And by the way, that was in New York as well, right?
Yeah. They just once they see it, they're going to because
get them out of there.
Of course it's bad for our health.
Of course. Like, it's fucking horrible.
Go cut 4 pounds. It's bad for your health.
Yeah.
Imagine what these guys are doing, especially Max in that particular situation. I remember thinking it was a joke. Do you remember it was like April 1st when the news came out that Max was stepping in? Who was originally?
Tony Ferguson. His fucking knee.
Because he was
tripping
wearing
over
sunglasses.
He wasn't.
Oh, wow.
I said that, and I apologize to Tony, because everybody thought that, because Tony wore sunglasses a lot. But no, he just tripped over some fucking loose wires. God damn it.
He was probably wearing sunglasses.
I don't think he was. I don't think he was. They said he wasn't. He tripped over some fucking wires.
He's probably kicking a pole right before that, though.
But how crazy is that? He tore his fucking knee tripping over some wires.
And it was April 1st when the news came out about that.
Right.
And everybody's like, no, it's swear to God, it's not an April Fool's joke. I remember sitting in the basement at Duke's thinking it was an April Fool's joke.
To this day, I wish Tony fought Khabib when Tony was in his prime. Because Tony in his prime, you know, people see him get knocked out by Michael Chandler and they see him lose to Nate. They see these fights.
It's a damn shame, man.
That's a long road of a battered body from war.
100%.
And if Tony Ferguson, when he was at the top of the heap, was a fucking boogeyman.
Yeah.
He was the boogeyman, man. He really was. He wasn't wearing my, I wasn't wearing my shades. I actually had my prescription sunglasses on. Oh. Well, that's still sunglasses. That's still sunglasses, Tony.
Tony Ferguson, the type of guy to not be wearing sunglasses while wearing sunglasses.
Those Tony Ferguson is the type of guy memes are amazing.
I hope he takes that and enjoys it and isn't mad about it, but I feel like Tony Ferguson's the type of guy to get mad about it.
He got mad because I called him a brilliant weirdo.
It's like, you are, bro.
So unusual. I mean, he's just his style of moving, and he would catch you with these weird punches, and he would train on a Wing Chun dummy.
Yep.
Eddie Bravo was working with him, and they were in Big Bear, and he said Tony was in such fucking insane shape that everybody else in camp would like be running sprints. Tony would lap them.
Yeah.
He would run these hills, run back down while these guys were still running and lap them going up the hills.
I forget who it was. Maybe Jeremy Stevens went and trained with him for a little bit and like hung out with him, and he would say that Tony would wake – I think it was Jeremy Stevens who said it. But he would be like, man, he'd just wake you up at like 2 in the morning and be like, we're running. And he would just go and do
these. That's Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah.
Floyd Mayweather would do that too. He would go to a club, drink water, hang out with everybody, and then run 10 miles home.
Yeah.
But like, that's what it takes to be elite. I just don't think Tony got his chance. I mean, Tony beat Kevin Lee, and he beat some really good guys, and he won the interim title.
That's definitely the fight that got away.
Got away. That would have been a really
John Jones
amazing fight.
And Ngannou is another one now where we're all like...
That might still happen. That could still happen.
But will it happen
when
we all want it to happen? You know what I mean? If it happens in 4 years from now...
But it doesn't have to happen in 4 years. Here's my thing. Again, Mr. Ngannou, please, hear me out. This is the, I mean,
don't
just for legacy... For legacy and just for also money, I think the big money is if he has an account. What if he knocks out Dillian White, right? What if they set him up with some boxer who's an elite boxer, not Tyson Fury,
and goes and wins a big fight?
And you got to remember, Ngannou is 265 ripped, natural,
cutting weight to probably be at 265,
with canned hams for fists, just giant. He's a fucking specimen, and the power is extraordinary. And if he's just punching and not worrying about takedowns, if one of those look at Wilder. Wilder, who's the greatest knockout artist ever.
Crazy.
Greatest. He's a one-punch knockout artist. I would say, I mean, you have your George Foremans and Mike Tyson are the most beautiful combinations we've ever seen in the heavyweight division. But Wilder,
pure
just
power.
Blap! You see his last fight?
It wasn't even...
Moving away. He hits this guy, and the guy's stiff. He has... that one, Ortiz, when he hit Ortiz in the forehead, pull that up. pull up Wilder knocks out Ortiz. Because he hit him, and Ortiz is a durable guy, a tough guy. And he had Wilder in some trouble in that fight. And Wilder just blap, yeah. hit him, blap, right in the forehead.
Yeah, you can tell,
head
man.
Head snaps that's... back, and Ortiz's eyes are all back. He's like, what the fuck just hit me?
Those are the things you can't train. That is God's gift to you.
And again, it's that long frame like you were
yeah,
talking about.
Yeah, look at
about.
Another lean.
Look
oh.
at that. Oh, my goodness. Look at this. Watch this. Here it goes again. Bam! I mean, look at Ortiz.
Look at,
Ortiz
know,
is like,
what?
What
the fuck?
He's just like trying to put his mouthpiece
even know
back
it.
In.
His mouthpiece is in. He's still trying to find it.
His legs aren't moving.
He's like, wait a minute.
He's like, what the fuck? Look at his
he's
face.
He's like upset
yeah.
about it.
He's confused. Wilder, preposterous power. But it just goes to show you, like, there's levels. Look at the chin of Tyson Fury. Tyson Fury, the 12th round of that first fight. Drops
oh, dead.
Him, right hand, left hook, and even does this, like it's over, like I got him,
yeah.
I got him. Nope.
He rises from
rises.
The dead.
Just
I remember watching
crazy.
That one live, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, that's it. He's
alone
done.
In my bedroom screaming. Alone in my bedroom screaming, oh my God, he's winning the 12th round. My wife was in the other room like, what the fuck are you yelling at? I'm like, he's winning the fucking 12th round. This is insane. He almost gets killed. He gets back up and he wins. Plan B option if Usyk fight fails to happen is Ngannou.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Well, the Usyk fight's going to happen. It's the most important fight in boxing. I think that fight is gigantic because you got Usyk who's, you know, beats Joshua twice and the best movement in boxing and skillful. He's a heavyweight Lomachenko.
Yeah.
And was the cruiserweight champion as an undersized heavyweight. And you got Tyson who's as big a heavyweight as you're ever going to see.
Massive.
6'9". Long as fuck,
crazy,
agile with back fat. Like
that picture right there,
crazy.
I couldn't tell
go
if
to
his
that picture.
Pants were falling down or
go back to that picture, Jamie. The picture just showed the Usyk, the backup fight that he's a backup fighter, the one that you just had up. If you look, the rolls of fat off his back.
Yeah,
I mean,
look at there.
That back
oh,
fat
yeah,
is insane.
Peak male performance.
The
right
bodybuilder.
There.
So you beat the bodybuilder. You haven't fought the Gypsy King.
You're crazy, dude.
He's the fucking best.
His dad's out of his mind, too.
I love him. I love that guy. Tyson Fury versus Alexander Usyk headed to Wembley in April. Huge boost to British boxing fans. What a fucking fight that's going to be. My God, that's going to be amazing. I just don't know if Usyk has the size to deal with that guy. It's going to be interesting to see what strategy he employs, whether or not he can avoid the big bombs and the reach and the length.
So long.
But.
Not the long lean type that we're talking
no,
about.
No.
A little different.
Long.
A little different.
I mean, he doesn't give a fuck what his body looks like. He's no. just a fighter.
Is he sober? Is
no.
he not sober? He's
no.
back on the sauce now?
He just doesn't drink in camp.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I don't know if he's sober. I don't think he's sober.
He's always, well, he's, that's what I mean. That's why I'm asking. I know he goes back and forth on, you know, he's... He's right in the head, and then he's not, and then you'll see him in a clip, and he's had, you know, 14
My mental
pints.
Health. Yeah. Well, you know, he's an inspirational story. I mean, he really is. I mean, the guy was like, he beats Vladimir Klitschko. He becomes a heavyweight champion and then loses his fucking mind.
Yeah.
He's drinking constantly, almost committed suicide, was driving his Ferrari, thinking about just fucking driving off a cliff, and then gets it together. And becomes a heavyweight champion again.
Yeah.
And then wasn't fully all the way back when he fought Wilder.
Yeah.
And then fights Wilder in the rematch. And then now he's fucking tuned up and ready. Beats yeah. the brakes off of Wilder. And then the third fight, Wilder catches him with a bomb.
Yeah.
That bomb that he caught him where you see the fat ripple all the way down to his body. Any other human. Any other human
is
that
not
Wilder
getting back up.
Any other human. Nobody punches like Wilder. Nobody. Oh.
Because you like we talked about, it's just it's in him. It's
yeah.
not he's not doing something in the gym with a trainer to get that kind of power.
No.
That's you were born with that gift.
It's also being a gypsy and being around that fucking rough tumble brawling world
yeah.
his whole life. His dad's a fighter. His brother's a fighter. Everyone's a fighter around him. Just fucking savages. Just in the bones.
Yeah, there's
in the bones.
Gypsy people, man.
Whenever he talks about retiring, I'm like, not yet.
Yeah.
Don't do it. I think that if he does beat Usyk, it's still possible. Because they're going to fight in April, right? Unless Ngannou decides to take a big money boxing fight before that, which I don't blame him for doing. But God damn it, if he beats Usyk, that's really the only compelling, interesting thing for him in that division. I mean, what else would be compelling? The Joshua fight? Not really, not after the Usyk fights.
Mm-mm.
I mean, unless Joshua comes back, because they're talking about Joshua fighting Wilder, right? Isn't that the talk? No. They're talking about Ortiz fighting Wilder, right? No. Ruiz. Andy Ruiz, right? That's what they're talking about. So Andy Ruiz, they're talking about him fighting Wilder. If that's... Look, Wilder versus Ngannou would be crazy. Yeah, that would be crazy. How about that fight?
I just think as long as he gets... something.
Yeah. I just want him to get
if
that.
If you're going to leave that contract on the table, I hope you get some big fights, man. Because that was a big.
Yeah. I mean, they offered him more money than any heavyweight before. But I think the sticking point, I'm talking out of school here because I don't know, just what I've read. The sticking point, I think, was that he wanted to be able to go off and do boxing. To his credit, he's like, hey, Conor McGregor did it. Why can't I do it?
Yeah.
And I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
But if I'm getting hundreds of millions of dollars a fight the table, it's
Conor
hard to.
$100 million in the Floyd Mayweather fight.
Yeah.
I mean, that's generational wealth.
Yeah.
Like, how do you fucking.
But he lucked out where the UFC wanted to partner with that and make that happen, right? That's where that whole situation really. And that's what Ngannou, I guess, wanted too. And it's just like, man, they probably did that one time and we're like, all right, you know what?
Yeah.
That was a whole.
What's also
lot.
If the boxer beats up the UFC fighter?
Yeah, how many times do you want to sign up for that?
You can't get the boxer to fight UFC.
Yeah,
the thing is, no one wants to do that. No one wants to do that.
Which you know what drives me nuts though is these. They still will go and talk all this trash. A lot of these boxers, it's like you guys know that given a street fight rules, you're getting your ass kicked. I don't care who you are.
An amateur fighter will kill you.
Yeah, they're just going to take you down. You're getting choked out.
Yeah, you'll get leg kicked. You won't be able to stop a takedown.
They can sit there and just do this to you for 25 minutes if they want.
Any elite, imagine any elite wrestler that gets in there with a boxer. The boxer has zero chance of not being taken down. Literally zero. Yeah. Unless that boxer's like Crawford. Like Terrence Crawford has a background in wrestling.
And if you don't know that, and you're like, oh, I'm just going to take this guy down, he sprawls on you that one time and cracks you. Can you imagine the panic that would set in?
You're like, oh my God, I can't take him down. And I'm fucked.
No. Oh now I got to box this guy?
That's a fight that we're missing out too. Him and Errol Spence. That's a fight we're missing out on. That bums me out.
I
got to
follow
do that.
I mean, with so much, we have so many fights now with the UFC that it's even hard for me to keep track of.
It's very hard.
All the boxing stuff that's going on.
Oh my God,
fights every weekend.
I keep track of that. I keep track of jiu-jitsu. I keep track of all the elite kickboxers. That's why I was so excited when Pereira fought in the UFC. I was telling
you've been following him for a while.
Well, I was telling Dana a while ago. I was like, this guy just fought. He just fought MMA. Like he's.
I remember
he's
watching Izzy back
way.
When he was still kickboxing. Mm-hmm. So when that debut came up, I was excited about that. A friend of mine had been telling me about him for a while. He's like, you got to watch this guy's style.
Oh
better.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, I contacted Izzy way before he fought in the UFC, and I asked him about it, and Izzy played it real smart. He was like, they give me a lot of money to fight in China. He's getting a lot of money, and he's like, I want to do this the right way and get really prepared. And to his credit, he did it perfectly.
Then what's the point? Congratulations. You got offered a UFC contract, and you just got wrestled to death.
Exactly. Exactly.
There's no point, because he turned it down a few times, I think.
Yes.
They were trying to get him even earlier, but it's...
Yes. He did it the right way. Yeah. He did it the right way.
You know what these guys are going to try to do. If you come in with that kind of kickboxing pedigree, they're going to take you down.
What do you think he does in the rematch? What do you think he does differently?
Well, I mean, you got to remember
that
calf
kick.
Yeah, he was doing really well, and he had hurt him really bad.
Almost had him stop in the first round.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, my God.
Right hand, left hook at the bell. Yeah. But Pereira came back in that second round like it never happened.
Yeah.
He's so big, dude.
He's.
Do you see when he's standing next to Jamal
stoic.
Hill?
Yeah.
When him and he's like staring down Jamal Hill.
Melting his face. As soon as I saw that, as I was there, I didn't know what, it hadn't been translated yet. I didn't know what Glover was saying. And he kept pointing back at Alex, and I'm like, oh, shit, he's setting up this fight now.
Yes.
He's going to retire, and he's setting up this fight. And it wasn't what he was saying. He was saying he was going to focus on training
him.
Pereira, but at first I thought Jamal's open to it.
Oh man, I love that fight. I love Jamal, man.
Dude, that guy
so good.
Has a lot of potential.
And getting better all the time.
And he took that fight. I mean, he didn't have a full training camp.
Right. And still fought five hard, long rounds
against
extreme pace.
Adorable sons of bitches that the UFC has ever seen.
Grappling talent. Jamal showed
grappling. And he's been saying that since the beginning. Like even when he was on Contender Series and we were talking to him, he's like, I know I'm known for these knockouts, but he was telling everybody, listen, I got really good jiu-jitsu. Finally got to show it. I mean, if you can escape those positions in a title fight against somebody like Glover Teixeira in Brazil and get out and do what you did, man.
Yes. And did you see the Jiří Prochazka thing?
Oh, my God.
So find the Jiří Prochazka
reaction.
Did you
see Jamal's?
And Jamal's reaction to Jiří.
Where are you at, though?
Jamal's so funny. Jamal, I don't want to say it because you need to see it. Jamal's so funny. He's funny on Instagram,
too. He's
low-key
funny, too. The way it's just that subtle, that subtle funny. Because I saw him. We were upstairs at the hotel because all our flights were leaving like crazy late from Brazil. And he had seen that video. And he's like, where is he getting the internet out there? He's like, is he watching the fight out in the woods? Was he watching it? Or did he watch it and then go out into the woods? I'm like, yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah. See, yeah, that's it. Play this live so we can hear it. Play it. No, do it. Redo it so we can hear the whole thing. Because you gotta... Okay.
Congratulations.
He's out in the snow.
I'm coming!
No, but then Jamal's response to that, they have it back to back. Here it goes.
But where you at, though? Where you at, though? By the way, that's what she said. That's what she said!
But where you at, though?
He's the man.
He's the man. And, you know, you talk about a guy who's got crazy power, too. And just intelligence of how to get that fucking power to your chin.
I think that's
the craftiness.
What was underrated. And now I think after this last fight, people are a little more aware of that. But he's very calculated.
Very,
man.
Very.
He's a calculated striker. Even though it looks like it's coming from unorthodox angles, when I talked to him afterwards, the head kick was planned. Like, they knew in order to switch southpaw seamlessly without kind of giving everything away, that was their plan. It was like, all right, when we switch, Glover's going to see we're switching. So what are we going to do to kind of stifle him for a second so that we can transition into that
left high kick?
Best thing you can do, man, is just throw a bomb. Because you have to address the head kick. You throw a body kick, a guy like Glover, what's he going to do?
Catch it.
He's going to catch it. He's going to take down. Even if you hurt him, he's going to drive through and potentially get a takedown. You throw it to the head. You're not catching head kicks.
Yeah.
Unless you get lucky, it bounces off and they you know, treetop you, but chances are they're going to go like this.
Yeah, it was interesting because he caught him a couple of times, that head kick, and wobbled Glover.
He's got like a size 16 foot. So think about it. Glover's blocking it. The big old foot is just wrapping around the side of his head.
You know better than anybody. Even if you block it, just the impact.
It rattles you.
Yeah.
It rattles everything. And I was even saying on the broadcast that it's a good idea, even if it doesn't hit his head, for people at home, we were talking about the leg kicks. Go ahead like this. And let me take a baseball bat.
Yeah.
Block this baseball bat.
Right.
It's going to hurt even on your forearms.
By the way, he kicks harder than you can swing a baseball bat, too.
Yeah, of course.
People need to know that, too.
Yes. Like, oh, because it's coming from down here, and your leg is bigger than a baseball bat.
Yeah. And especially if someone has, like, real power in their hips and knows how to really swing it.
I think he needs to keep developing that.
Oh, my God,
Keep developing that left kick and get a little more flexible. Because you could tell he's just hammering it up there.
Yeah.
It's like if he starts working that and gets sneaky behind, maybe setting it up with kind of like Leon did against Kamara, where you set it up with that cross, kind of pump fake.
So many good fights in that weight class, right? You have Jiří who's coming back, gets the shoulder surgery, which
hopefully not too soon, though, man.
Right?
Because apparently that was a pretty devastating injury that he had. I don't know what he all tore in there, but.
Well, tell the story of what happened, because it's kind of crazy. You know the story with Jiří?
No.
His shoulder gets out of socket in training camp, right, which is dangerous enough, right?
Like, yeah.
So his camp, they try to put the shoulder back
in. Oh, I heard they were
yank on it, and they tear it to shreds. So the doctor, the UFC doctor said it was the worst shoulder injury he had ever seen.
That's what I had heard.
That's not
I forgot that they said that. The people trying to put it back in place, everybody just sees a video of a doctor doing that. And it's like.
Well, you have to also recognize, too, and I hope Yuri knows this, and if he doesn't, maybe he's listening. Your muscle tissue will heal faster than your connective tissue, your tendons, your ligaments.
Yeah.
You feel good, but it's not ready.
No.
That's why guys blow out their ACL again after doing it. Like they get their surgery.
I'm good to go.
Yeah.
No, man.
Yeah.
Not good to go.
Ed Herman did that, right? He gets the ACL surgery, recovering from ACL surgery, feeling pretty good, blows it out again.
Yeah.
That's really common because the ligaments, even though they feel ready, the tissue around them is strong, the actual ligaments themselves are not. They take a long time. The blood supply is very weak.
That's one of those injuries that, I mean.
Shoulders are rough.
Shoulders and ACLs. I mean. I had minor injuries throughout fighting to my knee, thank God, like meniscus stuff, that they go in and
cut that out. Your knee's kind of compromised after that.
To this day, because I'm missing the whole inside part of it, basically. Mm-hmm. If I'm just standing around, I can kind of like shake it. I can feel that it's...
Yeah, it wobbles. I'm missing that on my inside of my left leg, too. Yeah, it wobbles.
There's no cushion there.
Yeah. I got an insufficiency fracture from skiing because I fell... And my knees clashed into each other because there's no ligament, there's no meniscus on that side.
Yeah.
And there was a crack. I was like, something's wrong. And
that makes sense. Yeah. You probably, even if you run too much with no meniscus, which is probably what I'm doing to myself at the moment.
I'm sure you're doing
And my
that.
Hip, something, you know, like your hip bone, what runs across that? Is that part of your IT band that runs literally across your...
I don't know. Do you get it worked on? Do you get it looked at?
Oh, I'm so bad at all that stuff, man.
Are you? You just try to ignore it?
I'm just going to... I'm good to go.
You're saying that about blood work. Like, if I don't want to look at it...
Oh, man. Like, Christine is... She's like, you need to go get your kidneys looked at. And I'm like, I don't...
Does it bother you?
Do
they bother you? They hurt?
Sometimes I got a little twinge back on the right side here. And I think it's...
Did you ever get kidney stones?
Never had kidney stones, but I did have, I had the rhabdo after the Hooker fight. And I was peeing Coca-Cola.
Mm.
And that's how I knew. And I mean, several times I pee blood.
What did they do to fix the rhabdo?
Flushed the shit out of me with IVs, basically, and made me wait in the hospital until my levels in the blood, they kept just taking little samples of blood.
Rhabdo is something that a lot of CrossFit people get.
Yeah, you just work your work your muscles so bad they start to break apart and I forget what starts to go poisons your blood basically.
Yeah, basically, rhabdomyolysis, right?
That's myalysis, right? Rhabdomyolysis,
something like that. But it's very sketchy stuff.
Yeah, it looks like you're peeing straight cola.
Well, that's that when people say, oh, there's no such thing as overtraining.
They're fucking 100%. You can literally destroy your kidneys from doing it.
Yeah, you could die.
And you could die.
People
and
die
I think
from
a lot
rhabdo.
Of it for me was it was because of the damage to my actual muscles, which was causing it. And because it wasn't the weight cut for that one. That one, I was dialed in for that one. So I know it wasn't putting too much strain in that, but 25 minutes of a dude hammering your calf, calf starts to break. It was probably starting to break apart. It almost had compartments in
it. This is the Hooker fight?
This is the Hooker fight, yeah. And I broke my orbital.
Jesus. That's a lot of stuff going on.
Oh, dude, for the longest time, I was seeing I was getting double vision. It's finally, since retiring, it's finally going away. But if I look to my right, even now, like if I was looking at you, this eye would start to kind of do its own thing a little bit.
Ooh.
Not anymore, though. It's been good.
When Bilal was telling me about getting his surgery.
He got poked?
Yeah, and then he fucked up the other eye as well. It's like you realize these guys. You know about that guy, that Russian cat that's fighting? The UFC just signed him. He has one eye.
Oh, I saw that, yeah. I didn't know he had one eye, though. I thought it was just discolored.
No. It's useless. It's gone.
Jesus.
Yeah, his right eye. And I guess they're going to let him fight. Which I always thought that Bisping gamed the system, which I think he did.
Well,
Bisping would pretend that he could see out of it, so he would memorize the eye chart. And so, how tough is that guy?
He's a G, bro.
How tough is that guy? If a guy fought 11 fights in the UFC, including winning the world title and defending the world title with one eye.
With one eye.
Fucking animal. fucking animal.
You know, it's like, so crazy. You'll be sitting on, which side is it? Which side is it?
It's when his right eye. On, it's his right eye.
And man, like, he'll bump in. I mean, it's legit.
Yeah.
Like, for anybody that's doubting Michael.
No, he literally cannot see out of that eye.
Yeah.
And I remember when it went bad, the Vitor fight.
Yeah.
Vitor head kicked him. And bad.
Worse for wear is, that was super sauced up Vitor, right?
Saucy Vitor. That was back in the days where they allowed them to do testosterone replacement therapy, which is so
crazy. It's like, oh, I need some testosterone. It's like, you don't need that much.
Well, that was what was crazy about MMA is that, you know, it's such a new sport, is that there was so much shenanigans that was allowed.
Yeah.
Like, look, if they started the UFC today, if the sport started from scratch, you think they'd allow extreme weight cutting? No, they would. If you were going to start it from the beginning.
There'd be hydration testing.
Yes. They would do it. I don't know how ONE FC is doing it, because apparently on one of the most recent ONE FC cards, 9 people failed their weight cut.
Because they're trying to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't make weight. So, like, I don't know, what the fuck do you do with that? And when I'm looking at those guys in ONE FC, I'm like, I don't go to your drug tests.
Oh, what?
Because they don't work very good.
Well, that's where it's like, wait a minute.
Right.
We're worried about them cutting weight. Meanwhile, these guys are taking every supplement known to mankind. It's like, I don't know if we should be worried about the weight cutting.
Including
we're
probably
worried
diuretics.
About. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're, maybe not if they're doing a hydration test.
Well, yeah.
I don't know.
I was talking to Eddie a while ago about it when he was fighting for ONE FC, and he was kind of talking about how he had to do the weight cut thing and how much he had to weigh. But I don't remember all the specifics, but I know it's you have to have a certain level in your urine or something like that so that they know. But
how about
there's
that
gotta be ways
cat
around it.
That he fought in his first ONE fight? What's his name? Nostiukin? Is that his name?
Oh, I don't even remember.
I think it's Timothy. I think is literally the first letters of his name are nasty. Is that his? Eddie Alvarez. He fought this fucking animal. It's like, you need to know. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Look at Nastyukin.
Where's he from?
Oh, Russia.
Yep.
Russia. Of course.
Of course.
Fucking tank. So big. He was so big. And, you know, when you look at the size of that motherfucker.
Yep. That's natural.
Ruthless striker. Ruthless fucking striker. But it's like.
Was he the one that was crushing Eddie's legs, too?
Yeah, he stopped Eddie. He stopped Eddie in Eddie's first fight back. First fight there.
But Eddie's tough, dude. I've trained with him.
And tough as shit. Fucking animal. But, you know, I mean, look how big Nastyukin is. Look, he's taller than him, thicker than him. He's a big motherfucker. I mean, look, Eddie, you know, fought 55 in the UFC. That guy looks like a big 170.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a big fucking fella. But that's my point, is that there's talent all over the world now.
Yeah.
There's not, like, the world-class talent is not limited to the UFC. We're getting these guys that enter into the UFC, and they're elite already.
They already have, they're 20-0, some of these guys. Or 19-2, some crazy records like that.
Yes.
No, dude, there's...
Yes. That fucking cat that just fought, that just knocked out Terrence McKinney. In Brazil.
Bonfim brothers.
Holy shit, is he good.
You
want to
talk about a guy that showed up and just had done his homework.
Oh my God,
for that fight, bro.
And McKinney's a bad motherfucker, dude. McKinney, when he put it on Drew Dober and almost had Drew Dober out in that fight and showed how durable Drew Dober is, and Drew Dober recovered and survived and wound up winning the fight, I was like, damn, McKinney's a future champion. But this fucking guy... This guy,
the flying knee?
Bonfim, is a monster.
And
he's
his brother,
so
Savage, as well. And you see his brother was watching back there.
Look at that flying
right
knee.
Right on the neck. I talked to Terrence after that, and I was like, he's like, bro, thank God that hit me here. He's like, my teeth would have been gone.
Yeah, because he didn't have his mouthpiece in at that time. Which I was wondering why the referee didn't put the mouthpiece back in, because there was a lot of time there between the mouthpiece falling out.
I think we said it. We're like, why wouldn't you put this in here? But...
What a brilliant flying knee, though. I mean, the way he set it up shows him the right switch knee. And, you know, that was what Farah Sahabi was talking about when he justified the stoppage with Israel versus Pejeda. He was like, nobody has a better switch knee than Pejeda. Oh.
If you're lingering your head in front of that dude,
that motherfucker,
stop the fight now, because
please.
You're not coming. You're not going to come back the same person after a knockout like that, because you're already messed up.
Yes.
And then you let Pejeda... smash you in the face with
one of the
flying
most powerful
knee?
Moves in all of MMA.
Yeah, no.
If you watch his fight with Jason Wilnes in Glory, where he stops Wilnes with that flying knee, His fucking, in the first fight he had in the UFC where he knocked that cat out with flying knee.
And that guy taking him down a bunch, and then it's just all takes one of those. Boom. It's a game changer.
Yeah, but these guys like Bonfim and his brother, the other Bonfim, it's Israel and
Ishmael and Gabriel.
Gabriel. And Gabriel won by guillotine. Yep. I mean, both those guys, fucking talented.
And both against legit dudes.
Yes.
Gabriel fought Munir Lazzez.
Yes.
He's a good, good fighter.
Very good fighter.
And he made him shoot. He made him panic shoot.
Yep.
He pressured the shit out of him, and he made him, and it, that's his thing. He's like, God.
Yeah.
And it's funny. They're both so well-rounded, but you can tell Gabriel forces guys into these grappling exchanges, whereas Ishmael, you can tell that dude just wants to take your head off. But both, they can both do either one.
Both either one, and also like the movement and management of distance is fucking phenomenal, like elite world class. I mean, that's what I said when you watch that fight. I'm like, you're watching these guys in their debut fight in the
UFC
because
they've been tested against legit talent. If you look at the records of the guys they fought some legit dudes. Whereas back in the day, you know, you could be 10-0 getting into the UFC, and you didn't fight. You might have fought one or two guys at the end there to get.
Right.
Joe Silva's attention back in the day, because I remember when you were trying to get in, he'd be like, "Can you got to go beat somebody
for
me to sign you." Mm-hmm. You could be 15-0, but if you've beaten a bunch of guys that are all 0-10, you're going to get here with a great record and then get murdered.
Joe Silva was so brutal.
He sent my ass to Brazil because we begged for a guy that was in the top 15. He's like, "Sure, here you go. Got to go fight Masaranduba down in." I was like, "Anybody else?" He's like, "That fight or no fight."
Yeah.
Okay.
But I guess you kind of have to be like that.
Then if you got hurt, though, and I had a good relationship with Joe, but one time when I hurt my knee, I had to pull out. He's like, unbelievable. You're hurt? You got to pull out? Great.
But
I tore my meniscus. What do you want me to do? I had a bucket handle tear.
That's the worst.
I was at Cowboys Ranch doing this. I was wheeling around in a chair. Because I couldn't stand up.
Yeah, those are the bucket handle tears what I had.
It
same
locked
thing.
Up.
It locks up. That's horrible. Terrible feeling. I tried to rehabilitate mine. I actually got it stitched up.
Yeah.
Because it was the same knee that I tore my ACL and I got it stitched up. But you just can't. The meniscus just goes, man.
Yeah, it's just wear and tear, man.
Do you know they're doing meniscus replacements now?
Yeah, back when I had it done, they're just cutting that shit out.
Cadaver meniscus now. They're taking, but apparently as you get older, it's less and less effective. It's
because it probably won't take.
With blood flow. It's just a blood flow thing. But I always wonder, like, when they say blood flow, are they talking about that for elite athletes? Like, how much blood flow are we talking about? If you're talking about for a regular person, maybe, because they're not training and they're not going to rehabilitate it to the extent that, like, a guy
like
you would do.
Yeah, like my mom getting a meniscus versus... Us
you.
Getting one who are going to go and work out every day. It's going to be a different situation. Yeah.
Yeah. But
I don't know.
Just what, I mean, I always just thank God for medical science, because just think about, I've had both my ACLs reconstructed. I would be a hobbling mess of a man if I lived at any other time.
Yeah.
My friend Steve.
You'd be broken.
I'd be broken. I wouldn't be able to do it. And I could do everything. It's crazy. I mean, I'm 55, and my body works as good as it worked when I was 30, which is nuts. With hormone replacement and stem cells and peptides and all this shit, it's amazing what you can do now. When I was a kid, I thought of a 55-year-old man. Like, that's a dead man.
Oh, yeah.
That's not a guy with a six-pack who's throwing kettlebells around. Like, it's a totally
different
world.
It is. It is different. I mean, I thought the same thing. Like, if you thought of... somebody that was even over 45, I'd be like, oh, man, time to settle in. And
when I was a kid, when I was 19 years old, I used to work at an athletic club. I worked at the Boston Athletic Club, and Bobby Orr used to come in and work out. And Bobby Orr, who was one of the greatest hockey players that's ever lived, Bobby Orr can barely walk.
Yeah.
This poor guy, because he's had those old school surgeries where they would cut your leg open like a fish.
Yeah, you're
and
screwed.
Just bolt things down and staple it together. Well, Bobby would get on the VersaClimber machine, and we would have to help him get on this machine because his legs would go. This is the range of motion. It goes from this to this.
Yeah.
Never fully extended. Either look at that's his knee. Bro, when you see it in real life, it's like a
brain.
Yeah, it's horrible. And again, I'm sure he probably has knee replacements now. But like when they worked on his knee back then, look, it's black and white photos. Look at his knees there. That photo there with the two of them see the big scar, the color one down there. Don't make me bust out the fucking thing.
I don't think that's him.
That's not him?
No, it just says old guy hockey.
Oh. That's old guy hockey, knee replacement. Right. Yeah, that's.
But those big slices like that.
Well, they do knee replacements now. You know, Kelly Starrett, who's a very famous strength and conditioning coach, he blew his knee out and eventually got a knee replacement. And he says it's amazing. He said he could do everything with it. And Michael Bisping, both of his knees.
He's got two of them.
Yeah. Old guy hockey.
I think for me, it's just going to be my hip someday is going to go. No doubt.
Well, have you got any stem cells in there?
No.
Oh, you should. You'd be amazed. Yeah. You'd be amazed at what they can do. Take a trip down to Colombia, my friend.
I see everybody Panama. Doing these things now, yeah.
Well, you know, Aljamain's doing that right now. Aljamain, there was an article I read this morning. Aljamain is trying to avoid bicep surgery. He has a torn biceps, and he's going down to Colombia right now to get it shot up. Because they're trying to get him to fight. They're trying to get him to fight Henry Cejudo in April.
Sooner than he wants, yeah.
Right. So here we are right now, and we're in February. So you
that's
got
really soon.
March, April. Yeah, I don't like it. What's it say? Next week, I'm off to Medellin, Colombia for bioaccelerator stem cell treatment program. Very optimistic this will get me back and ready to compete sooner than later. Well, this is where I'm a big fan of the Conor McGregor approach to avoiding the USADA testing pool.
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
just to heal up.
I don't know what Conor did. I don't know what's happening when he's outside of that pole, but I've never seen a guy get that big before.
That big and
he looks
just
amazing.
Recover from a broken shin like it was no big deal. I mean, look at Chris Weidman.
Yeah.
He was having all kinds of complications with that thing. It's not an easy surgery to come back from, and infections and stuff like that can start to happen. Look at Luke Rockhold, who couldn't even get over a staph infection. He still puts on sleeves on that shin.
Mm-hmm.
That's, man.
It's crazy. But that is better than the break. The break is very rare that someone comes. I mean, Anderson is the only guy that's really come back. Weidman still hasn't come back.
No.
He hasn't had a fight since that fight with Uriah. I mean, it's a devastating move. And also Tyrone Spong, when he fought Gokhan Saki, same thing.
It's horrifying. It's like nightmare fuel.
Very
breaking
scary.
Your shin like that. And as a fighter, that you have nightmares about that.
The first time that happened in the UFC was Corey Hill, and I remember screaming at the referee, stop the fight.
Yeah.
Because the referee, I don't think he recognized it yet. He recognized it eventually, but he...
Didn't he step back on it, too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's
they always
the
do.
Worst they always do, because it's your instinct.
You don't even know.
Smack.
Well, you don't know it's broken yet, you just know it hurts. I mean, how many times does it hurt and not break? You know? But that's the thing about shins. It's like, when
I'm
that
surprised
thing
hasn't
snaps...
they haven't had any crazy... what is it called when it pops through the skin?
Compound
fractures.
That's
surprised we haven't seen
it. Weidman did, yeah. Weidman's popped out the back of his leg.
Popped
out the back of his calf. I mean, Chris has been, how many years out now? Is it two?
That's been a while, man.
When was the Uriah Hall fight? I want to say it was 20. I want to say it was 2020. It might be more than 2 years. 2020 or 2021. I mean, first kick he throws, full blast.
Just snap.
Oh, God. 21. April of 2021. So, yeah, we're closing in on 2 years now and still hasn't been able to come back. Fuck, man. Chris Weidman, that's another guy, man. When he was in his prime, he was such a motherfucker, dude.
I mean, to take out...
Everybody.
When he beat Silva, though, that was when we were all like, man, nobody's going to beat this guy. Can't beat this guy. Can't beat this guy.
And he was beating Luke Rockhold, and he throws a wheel kick. Isn't that wild? That one kick, which, by the way, not a good kick either. He's not good at it. It's not his
You're
thing.
You're a wrestler, Chris.
Yeah. I mean, why did he decide to do that? And then he gets taken down and smacked. And Luke Rockhold's top game.
Crushed him.
Ooh, his top game is fucking nasty.
Yeah.
What he did to Lyoto Machida.
Yeah, I was in the stands for that one. I was watching that one.
Look, Chris Weidman was a bad motherfucker. Chris Weidman was such a bad motherfucker.
Like,
look,
that
he throws
was so
that
bad.
So bad. And then he gets wrestled down, he gets taken down, and just destroyed. I mean, it's such a bad kick. And Luke Rockhold, when he gets on top of you, he's one of the worst guys to ever have on top of you. The David Branch fight, when he got on top of him and smashed him. I mean, Luke was so fucking good at top game. His fucking jiu-jitsu is so underrated. I mean, I don't even say it's underrated.
Yeah,
it's just
he's
like,
good,
man.
If he had just completely concentrated only on jiu-jitsu, I think Luke could have been a world-class jiu-jitsu competitor.
Yeah.
He's so fucking strong. And he came up with that camp with DC and Cain Velasquez. So he's like in there with these elite heavyweight wrestlers all the time.
He loves that left kick as well.
Isn't it crazy though that like one fight like that with Weidman just changes the trajectory of his career?
Yep.
Before that, he's this destroyer. The Lyoto Machida fight, I said, like remember that fight? He gets Lyoto down and just smashes him.
Yeah.
Bad. And you're like, Jesus Christ. Chris was so mentally tough. And so fucking good at everything. Great striker, great wrestling, tough as fucking nails.
It's almost like you get these one moment where things don't go right, and then you can't. I don't know if it's the competition around you sees a weakness in you, and then they aren't as intimidated by you, and then starts to. But I think it also is just this game is so young. And people are getting so good, so fucking fast, man. Like, nowadays, these kids, it's unbelievable how good they are.
Rosas Jr.
19 years old?
He's not even. He's 18,
right?
18 years old, fighting in the UFC. And
well, he's fighting. He's got a good fight, too. He's fighting Christian Rodriguez,
yes.
Who I trained with at Rufus Sport for years.
Very good fight.
That's going to be a good fight.
Very good fight, yeah.
That kid is... He had a little stumble on the Contender Series where he didn't make weight, didn't get signed on that, and then he lost his debut up at 45 to Jonathan Pierce, right? JSP?
Mm-hmm.
But his last fight, he looked unbelievable. The kid can grapple. The kid's got unbelievable kickboxing. I think he's training with Henry Cejudo and those guys now out in Arizona.
When you're that good at 18, they're throwing you right to the wolves. It's just like, what, the sky's the limit for these guys. And then, you know, there's... a bunch of guys like that out there that are fighting in LFA, that are fighting in this organization.
Dude, you just go into these gyms, go into these mega gyms, and just if you watch a practice, the mats are filled with these kids. You're like, what the beating up some UFC pros and stuff, and nobody knows who they are yet because they've grown up with that's all they know.
Right.
They don't know, oh yeah, I did Taekwondo as a kid, and then I did some boxing, and then I did X, Y, and Z. It's like, no, I do MMA.
And they get to watch all the best fighters ever. If you go back to like the early days of the UFC, like what are they basing their style on?
Yeah.
I mean, they basically were
figuring it out.
Yeah, they were figuring it out as they went along. And it's also a thing with fighters where when you're operating at like fucking redlining at this, you only have a certain amount of years. Like I think there's like a principle that a lot of people try to apply. I don't think it's universal, but it's a 9-year thing that as an elite MMA fighter, you really only have like 9 years.
Yeah.
9 years where you just at the top, and then eventually, like Tony Ferguson, we were talking about, or Fedor. Fedor is another great example of that.
Yeah, where you're the GOAT, you're the one of the greatest heavyweights of all, and then it's just like you're getting
the wheels fall
getting
off,
beat up.
Yeah, I feel like if you go back to those days, the early days of Pride, that the Fedor that was dominating people in Pride was one of the most impressive fighters that has ever fucking lived.
Yeah,
God damn, he could do it all. He could catch you with arm bars off of his back. He would recover from being taken down and immediately roll into Kimura like the Randleman fight.
Yeah, get smashed on his neck.
Yes.
Look like he was going to...
Yeah.
Look like the person should be dead. Should be
amazing.
Looking at a dead body and then armbar.
And, you know, again, it's like you only have so many years that you can operate at that level. How many training camps can you get through? How many times can your body take that kind of punishment?
That's why you got to get out. You got to get out even when maybe you think... Oh, I got a few more fights. Like, there's no doubt in my mind I have 5 more fights that I could have done.
How old are you now?
38.
38. So you still, it seems like the back of your fucking head is still a little bit of an ember back there.
No, it's always going to be that. Listen, I'm trying to start an acting career. I'm trying to do a triathlon career. I'm trying to be a commentator. You know what? I'm lucky though, man, because you can see why guys overstay their welcome.
Yes.
You got to make money. It's your job.
Yes. Yes.
You didn't know anything else anymore.
Yeah.
And then suddenly everybody's like, retire. And it's like, well, screw you. What do you mean? I'm 38, I'm 37 or 40. It's like, what do you mean retire?
Right.
What am I going to do now?
Right.
So you see why guys have to fight past that. I was super, super lucky and blessed to get the commentary job where I can think, okay, do I want to keep fighting? Why am I still fighting? And I just didn't see a picture for the belt anymore. And if I don't see a picture for the belt, I always told everyone around me, my mom, my loved ones, I said, if I don't think that I can fight and win the championship, I'll retire. And that day came.
There's fights where guys take that one too many fights, and it's just like you see it coming. Like with Frankie, it was Chris Gutierrez.
Yep.
I was like, Chris Gutierrez is so slick. He's so good.
I didn't like that fight from the
beginning. I did not like that fight. I love watching Chris fight. Chris is so fucking smooth and technical. I just love his style, man.
He's good.
Like his movement and style and all the jukes and fakes and
just.
Oh.
And you're talking about a guy who has unbelievable knees.
Yes.
And that's been in his career.
Yes.
And you match him up with Frankie.
Yeah, and he catches him with the perfect knee and flatlines him for his with his kids in the audience. I'm like, that's
And that's the other thing. A lot of people are like, why don't you come back and do a retirement fight?
No,
why? So I can get knocked out in front of everybody that I love?
No, I like what you're doing. I like that you found a new thing to do.
Never been knocked out.
That's amazing.
Never been knocked out.
You got the a fucking only stoppage, amazing chin.
The only stoppage was due to the cut. It's the only time I've been.
What fight was that?
Trinaldo.
Oh.
Peeled my whole face open. Dude, you could see the whole eyebrow.
Yeah, the skull. Yeah. Well, that's an amazing accomplishment to fight the guys that you fought. Got fight Edson Barboza twice. Barboza's switch kick to this day, when he was in his prime, Barboza had the craziest switch kick I think I've ever seen in my life.
Oh.
It would be like you were watching a video and frames were removed or something.
Yeah. Like, how is he that fast?
It would just,
and that's exactly how it feels when you're fighting.
Move along. But it was interesting that like his hands never really matched the level of his kicks.
No.
Really wild, right?
Yeah. I mean, he punched me a couple times. I mean, as square on the jaw as you can hit somebody. It's like, I was never worried about his punches. It was just his kicks and his knees.
Yeah, everything.
Like even against the fence, if you're you know grappling for position and you just kind of dig a few in, you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the times that I knew how special Khabib truly was when Khabib got a hold of him and you saw this look on Edson's face, like this 1,000-yard stare.
Yep.
Like, what the fuck?
I thought the same thing. Yeah. That's when I was like, okay, I tried to do that. And that ain't easy to do to that guy.
Right.
And I've trained with Edson after the fact that I fought him the first time. And he's not an easy guy to like hold down. I mean, he's strong as shit.
Yeah.
And then you see Khabib's just like,
boom.
Just sitting there.
Just
smashing
him. Just had so much control and power. What do you think happens to John Jones? When John Jones gets up to heavyweight, we've never seen him fight it. I've heard all the training room stories about him ragdolling heavyweights. John at heavyweight's going to be even better because he's not diminished by making that cut to 205. And John's always, I mean, he definitely has a frame for a heavyweight. And he looks good now. He's 254, 253, big as fuck.
I'm excited about it because towards the end of his light heavyweight reign, you know, he's kind of playing with his food a little bit right?
Yeah.
And had that fight where, you know, a lot of people think he lost. But really, I think a lot of it was just him being lazy, to be honest with you. Now at heavyweight, I think we're going to see him come out and try to
hopefully
make some freaking statements.
Well, it's also, he has been out for all these years. You know, he's been how many years now? It's been 2+ years since he's fought. And, you know, you wonder, does he have ring rust? Does he come back hungrier? And also,
I definitely don't think he has ring rust.
But he's dealing with the most mobile and agile heavyweight in the business.
Three
years. Wow. February 2020. Wow. And the Dominic Reyes fight, the last fight that he had, arguably lost that decision. I mean,
I thought he lost it.
You know, John is famous for doing just enough in training. And with some of those guys.
That's what I'm saying. Gustafson, I think at heavyweight, hopefully.
Well, he's training with Cejudo, which I really like.
Yeah.
At least he's doing some of his camp with Cejudo, which I really – Henry Cejudo is a goddamn genius. He is a fight genius.
Well, I mean, you got a guy who – Olympic champion, then double champion. Clearly the man understands combat sports on another level.
He knows how to win.
And he knows how to win.
And Mighty Mouse told me when he went to train with him, he said he was so impressed by how systematic he was and the game plan and strategy and how he puts everything together. Yeah. He said, I've never seen anybody that's so meticulous in their preparation.
Yeah, and you see that even in the fighters that he's training now. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm excited to see him come back. I mean, put all the cringe stuff and all that, whatever.
Well, that's kind of funny.
Right? That's his whole thing. But his skills?
Oh, undeniable. I mean, the way he chopped down Dominic Cruz, I was like, oh, my God. The way he beat the fucking brakes off of TJ Dillashaw. Oh, my God. Yeah, oh, my God. I mean, he's a monster. And the fact that he comes back from Mighty Mouse beating him in the first fight, quick, stopping him early with knees to the body, and, you know, and then comes back and beats him in the second fight after getting his calf kicked out from under him. Remember?
Yeah.
He got that drop foot.
That was one of the first times where we saw that, where I was like, what the hell is that? Yeah. Looks like his ankle's broken.
Mm-hmm.
And then he
came back and won the decision. He knows how to win. I love him and Aljamain. That is a very fascinating fight because Aljamain's strength is his grappling. You know, Aljamain, when he gets your back, dude, there's not a better fucking person in any division. Aljamain, that backpack, woo!
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
And the way
he
looked against TJ, like, obviously TJ had a fucked up shoulder in that fight, but Aljamain looked like a dominant champion.
Yeah.
He looked like he's coming into his own. I mean, he's the perfect build for 35. Fucking shredded. Shredded at 35.
Yeah.
So muscular and strong and so fucking, so talented. And also just confident. Everything's together.
Yeah, and he's from the distance, which is, he's so good with his kicks, right? And that's something he works on constantly because when you think about it, if you're a really strong grappler and you're a guy who you wanted to get to the ground, you've got a great wrestling base, why wouldn't you work on having those kind of weapons, those long-range weapons? Like, come on, mm-hmm. you try to close the distance on me.
Right.
Because if you don't, I'm just going to sit out here and I'm going to kick the shit out of you, literally, with my kicks.
Front kick the fuck out of your body.
I'm going to front kick you. I'm going to roundhouse kick you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to learn some spinning kicks. He was working. I saw him doing a little bit of, like, traditional martial arts at the Apex.
Mm.
But that's genius.
Yeah.
Because you're forcing your opponents to have to close the distance, mm-hmm. and you're a freaking wrestler.
Well, Cowboy was always so good at that. Cowboy would throw high kicks because his guard was so good.
Yeah.
People forget in the early days of Cowboy's
career.
Oh,
he
was triangling the fuck out of people.
Yeah.
Cowboy's grappling is so underappreciated.
Oh, bro, the amount of times that I have been choked by Donald Cerrone.
Those legs.
I hate it. And you go at his ranch, and he's up at freaking elevation in Edgewood, New Mexico. So you're training at like 7,500 feet above sea level, coming from Philly. And then this dude's wrapping triangles and body triangles around you.
Ooh.
And just talking shit to you the whole time. You're like, God damn, I hate him.
Isn't the size of him now?
Yeah, he's yoked up right now.
I commented
on his thing. I was like, do you even lift, dude? Like, what are you doing? He comments on all my shit. He's like, nope, that's where we're different. I ain't doing any of that shit.
He's not lifting?
No, of course he's. Yeah, he's definitely lifting. That's why I made a joke. I'm
he's
like,
gigantic now. He's got to be 200 pounds now. He's fucking gigantic.
Yeah.
That photo of him was wearing a tank top, and you look at
his
massive arms. Like,
and he was never like that. He couldn't gain weight to save his life.
Yeah.
Back in the day. No, you get older, man.
Mexican supplements, bro.
And some, you know,
look at
proper
the
beef.
Fucking neck on him.
Yeah.
Look at his neck. That's preposterous.
Coach Ray.
Look at that. Yeah. It's an interesting time, man. It's an interesting time to be a commentator. It's an interesting time to be a fan. You know, there's so much talent and so much going on. And this is the only sport, really, in our lifetime where you can go back 20 years and it's almost unrecognizable.
Yeah.
The difference in the talent level between 2000 and 2023 is so extreme. It's so different to watch how good guys have gotten.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
They're good everywhere.
Everywhere.
These kids can do a flying knee, flying mm-hmm. triangle, and then hit you with just a beautiful double leg and transition seamlessly in their wrestling. And they know how to do it on the fence. Mm. They know how to.
And then, you know.
I hate it.
It's amazing. It's really, and you got to wonder, like, what are we looking at 10 years from now? I mean, when you got these Bonfim dudes coming in that are, you know, one fight in the UFC and he looks like a world champion.
We're going to see some crazy good fights and some crazy finishes, man.
Yeah.
I think because as long as the competition keeps getting up like that, you're not, I mean, mm-hmm. sometimes you're going to catch, but like McKinney, to do that to.
Yes, I know.
Bro.
Do that to McKinney, and to catch him like that, And, you know, McKinney, to his credit, like, what a class act he is. Like, after the fight,
did shots with him
and then posts it, you know, and posts a photo of the two of them together. Good for him. He's such a great character.
He's a good kid. He's so young. I mean, these guys, they take losses now. It's like, dude, you just don't want to see too many of those kind of knockouts early in a kid's career, too. It's like, God.
Pull up that card, that March card, please, the one in Vegas, because that whole fucking card is crazy stacked.
This is March 4th?
Yeah. The whole card is so fucking stacked.
I'll be in Vegas for that one. Not working, but I'll be doing like a triathlon camp out there.
Valentina Shevchenko versus Alexa Grasso. That's a great fight. Jalen Turner.
Yeah, taking on Dan Hooker, dude.
Jalen Turner is a motherfucker, dude. You talk about a guy coming into his own.
Yeah.
Jalen Turner, and he is as big as you can get at 155.
Yeah, he's like 6'4", I think.
Bo Nickel and Jamie Pickett. Ooh, I love that. I love that.
There you go. Derek
Brunson versus Dricus du Plessis. Yes. Ian Garry, he's a bad motherfucker too. I'm not a Sean Keenan. Is that a debut?
No, he's had a few fights.
I don't think I've commented.
I've seen
his
him,
fights.
But I think I called one of his fights.
Ian Garry's a bad motherfucker too.
And
man.
You know what? Ian had that one stand up knockout, but I feel like his ceiling hasn't been reached. He hasn't really shown what he's gonna do in the UFC yet.
I
still think he's got a lot to show in a good way.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's so young. How old is Ian Garry?
He's got to be in his mid-20s.
He's young as fuck, man. He's got massive, massive potential. 25 years old.
25.
Woo! Yeah, and tall, too, for the weight class. Tall and slick. And Cody Garbrandt versus Julio Arce.
Yeah. I think that might have changed. I think Julio is out.
Oh, really?
I mean, it's not changed on there yet, but I think I just saw a post saying that he was out of that fight. I don't know who Cody's going to fight, but
tough road for Cody.
There's another one, man.
Yeah, another guy. The lead of the elite at one point in time, and you know,
and then just
yeah,
a couple. Well, and I know Cody's had trouble with. I think he was knocked out really bad when he was young and up and coming too.
Yes.
So
someone KO'd him very early on in his career, real bad.
Yeah.
And so Arce injured, bounced from Cody Garbrandt fight. Well, still enough time.
Yeah, there's tons of ton. Oh, that's a sad.
Yeah, that's a bummer. That's a bad one. So who do they get? No word whether the promotion plans to keep Garbrandt on the fight card. You know, with Cody Garbrandt, after all those KOs, you got to wonder, like, how many more does he have left? You know, when a guy gets KO'd a gang of times, like, there's a lot of people that it gets to a certain point in time, you're like, someone needs to step in and stop this from happening.
Yeah, you know, like, it was like 4 in a row or something for him, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a young guy. This sport's rough on our heads to begin with.
Yeah.
But when you've been put out that many, that's when you really got to think, hey, maybe it's time. I mean, if he goes and gets on another win streak, but.
Well, Sean O'Malley was talking about this. What's that gentleman he works with, Dan Gardner? The guy, they're working on a concussion protocol and like to rehabilitate people from concussions, and that there's things you can do to help yourself recover and heal.
Yeah, whereas, I mean, you think there'd got to be, right? Because it's got to be something with the fluids and like what causes some people to have brain damage and other people don't. That's the real issue too, is I've talked to the doctors at the Cleveland Clinic. I've been part of a study that they do. They offer everybody in the UFC and a lot of NFL guys and all that every year you go back and you do the same series of tests and they run the same exact scans. And I went because I was having some headaches when I fought twice in a row. I fought Ross right after I fought Edson the first time. And for like a month, I had a headache. And I was like, this is not normal. Ooh. And it turns out I just had a really bad concussion that I wasn't knocked out, but it doesn't mean you don't have a concussion. And I was having all these symptoms. So I went and had all that testing done. And I just recently, last year, I went back. And it's amazing. I mean, I aced everything that I failed the first time I had went. My scans all came back clear. And I was talking to the doctor. And I was like, some of these guys will fight only a few times and have severe brain damage and all this kind of stuff. Why am I showing no signs of any of that? He's like, A lot of it's genetic and how
you're Mark Hunt.
Yeah.
Mark Hunt, like, you know, he jokes around about it. He's like, mate, I'm Polynesian.
Yeah.
I can fucking take it.
It's just, it's true, man.
It's true. Did you see Mark Hunt knock that fucking undefeated boxer out? Did you see that?
No.
Bro. Pull that up. Mark Hunt, they bring him in. He fights his cat in Australia. This guy is this undefeated, up-and-coming heavyweight boxer, young, good-looking guy. And Mark Hunt puts it on him and flatlines him in front of everybody. Crazy. Huge underdog, 40-plus years old, been through wars, former K-1 Grand Prix champion.
Don't let him touch your chin.
Oh, my God. Mark Hunt, the king of the walkaway KO. So he's fighting this guy, Sonny Bill Williams.
Jacked out of his mind.
Jacked, big, tall. Look at him. And
Mark looking like he's suffering through it.
And it's a boxing match too, by the way. You know, it's not. He doesn't even get to kick you with those fucking tree trunks. And Mark Hunt stopped him, and it was crazy. I mean, Mark Hunt was brought in. He caught him with that right hand. Mark Hunt was brought in to be the big name. Look at that left hook, boom, right hand drops him, dude. That's a huge win, And I don't know if Mark Hunt's going to fight again, and that might be the end of it. But this dude gets back up, and Mark Hunt puts it on him.
Mark Hunt,
one of the last guys. Oh, look at that right hand. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Look at that left hook. Oh, that's it.
He can't even argue.
Mark motherfucking Hunt. What a savage. What a savage he is. What a fucking savage.
Yeah, that dude is.
You know, and he had that crazy lawsuit. I don't know what happened with that.
I know, yeah. I don't know what happened either.
But you know, these legends, man, you know, it's such an honor to be around these guys and just to get to see.
Oh, dude, I've gotten to call a couple of his fights, and every time I interviewed him, I'm just like, bro.
Mark motherfucking like, Hunt.
I'm happy to just
be
calling
talking
your fight, dude.
Yeah, man.
I've been watching him do pride fights, kickboxing fights, you know. Doing shit like that for the longest time.
He took a Crow Cop high kick. He took a Crow Cop high kick right on the fucking dome and just got up.
Yeah,
I mean, who does that? No one else.
No.
Crow Cop cracks you. I mean,
that was another one, man, that I loved him back in the day. And then he comes over to the UFC and it just doesn't. It didn't pan out. I was so excited when he was coming over because I'm, you know, coming from a striking background, mm-hmm. that left kick, I'm like, hell yeah. And
remember when he fought Heath Herring
mm-hmm.
and his shin disappeared in Herring's body?
Yeah.
His left shin just went so deep in his body. There's a photo of Crow Cop landing that left body kick.
And it's just like folded over.
It's literally like inside his rib cage. It's so deep into his body cavity.
And that's the left kick, man.
Oh, my God. Look at this photo. Look at that. Look at that.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, are you fucking kidding
me? You're peeing a lot of blood after that one.
Dude, Crow Cop's power kick, that left kick. You know, he would say right kick, hospital, left kick, cemetery.
Yep.
My God. That kick was so insane. When you see that image of that thing. And remember when he knocked out Vanderlei? He lands that high kick on Vanderlei and flatlines him?
Split him open too, didn't he?
Oh, my God. Yeah, giant. Yeah, here's the, like.
Oh, I mean, you know, what are you doing?
The dude with the mask
with
on?
With the fucking
Dos
mask
Caros.
On.
Yeah, that was very unnecessary. But that's also pride. Look at that fucking ball.
Oh, right off.
Bounced
he
it
would
off
skip
the top.
It right off the top of your head.
Wait, get it over your gloves, man. I mean, Mirko Crow Cop. I mean, he had such a perfect style to transition from kickboxing to MMA because he was so explosive. Whereas, like, some guys, they were more technical and they would set things up more. Like, I don't know if a guy like Ernesto Hoost would have been the best guy, or a guy like Peter Ernst would have been the best guy to come over to MMA. But he was the best guy to show what an elite level, top of the food chain kickboxer would look like. Fighting in MMA. There it is.
Oh, that's a bad one. I remember
that
one.
Emelianenko.
Yeah, it's
Fedor's brother.
Fedor's
Alexander.
Brother.
Alexander. But the Vanderlei Silva one was my favorite. Dude, he was so good. So there it is.
Yeah,
boom.
Man, it's another one that skips off.
Yeah.
It skips off the top of your freaking head.
He was so clever in how he set it up. Boom.
See ya.
Oh, my God.
Good night.
And that was the Pride days. The Pride days were fucking amazing, man.
Oh, dude, it was just like calling Shogun's retirement fight. Speaking of another case where
too many.
Calling your last fight, saying I'm going to. It's just never Never going to work out.
Well, Shogun, like, you could see, like, all the wars are, like, you could see it on him. His and body didn't
he's
look
only,
right.
Like, I think he's 41 now or something like that.
But he's 41 in, you know, Valley Tudo years.
Dude, just think about the fights in the gym.
Oh, my God.
That guy went through.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, those old days with the Shoot the Box Academy, they would go to war.
They were trying to knock each other out?
Every day. Every day. Yeah.
And that's not good for longevity of the career.
No.
But, I mean, that's – even when I was coming up, there was still a lot of that going on, man. You know, guys just – I would get into fist fights in the – we were just trying to knock each other out. And I'd look back. I'm like – So stupid.
But I mean, what do you think is the balance, though? Because I think there has to be some hard sparring just to prepare you.
100%. So I think you have to pick moments to do it. And I think you have to kind of really have that be the day that you're doing those rounds, right? And also have people that you're sparring with that are kind of trying to simulate the fight. Whereas if you're just going around the room and sparring everybody in the room that day, like most gyms do now, where it's like you just, let me grab this partner, let me grab that partner. You're not getting the look for your fight. You're getting pissed off. Somebody hits you with something, you end up going to battle with them. Whereas if it's more secured, kind of like how pro boxers do everything, where you have your sparring partners, that day is set up, you're greased up, you have somebody in the ring. I think it needs to be very formalized like that when you're going to have your hard days. Mm. So that you're not just off in the corner getting into a slugfest with some dude that's having, you know, a dick measuring contest with you, basically.
That's the hard conversation, too, about what kind of camp do you go to? If you're an up-and-coming fighter, do you go to ATT, where you got, like, 15 dudes who just flew in from Russia, and they're staying in the dorms, and they're fucking assassins?
Yeah. You get spinning back fisted to death?
Or do you start out at a small gym? I had this conversation with Joaquin Buckley, where he's talking about he likes smaller gyms because he gets individualized training, and he gets a coach that's really looking at his development.
Yeah.
And setting up his camp, like, this, you're going to spar with this guy, because this guy's going to emulate this for you.
Yeah,
and
we're even going to bring in guys, because there's not enough guys here, and you're probably the best guy in the room.
Right.
You need to. I think that is the way to go. And I think being able to bring people in to work with you as well and keep a good relationship with other fighters and other camps to kind of share sparring partners and bringing people in so that you need to get the look that you want for that fight. And I didn't, like, in hindsight, that's so overlooked, I think. It's just, you just fight anybody. It's like, well, you know, on the day somebody can get hurt, you might be stepping in. It's like, yeah, but.
Is that optimal, though? I mean, sometimes it is, because sometimes that makes your career. Sometimes you get that last-minute fight, you step up, you win the fight, and then it rockets your career forward.
Yeah.
You take that chance. You have that. I mean, Jamal Hill, right? I mean, that five-round fight.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, fighting for the title.
You definitely have to be ready.
What a crazy move the UFC does, right? Ankalaev and Blachowicz have this fight, goes to a draw, which is just unheard of, right? Everyone's like, what? And then Dana gets pissed. Fuck it. You guys are going to fight for the title.
You're both
now.
Out.
And like, what? Now Glover and him are fighting in Brazil for the title.
But what a great fight, man.
What an amazing fight. And for Jamal, that's the perfect opportunity. Like, what an opportunity. He goes in there and fights in Glover's hometown and wins the title.
Yeah, and Anthony Smith gets kind of cast to the side. And
Anthony didn't make weight either.
Bro.
Which is worse, because Anthony was the substitute.
Yeah, he was talking to me, too, and he really felt like it was going to plan. But there's no motivation, man. That's where those things are tricky, too, right? It's like, what are you pushing yourself in that sauna for? It's like,
right,
you know you're not fighting.
Glover's never going to fall out of a fight.
No, and
Jamal's not going to fall out of a fight either.
Yeah, it's his opportunity right now. And he was dialed in the whole week, and Anthony knows that.
Right.
So that's why I feel like it was just a little bit of lack of motivation, unfortunately. Although,
perhaps,
yeah, it's free money.
It's free money, but it's also like, God damn, man, what a brutal thing to do to your body for no reason.
And then I don't know, but does he get anything?
But the day of the weigh-ins, they should know. Like, Jamal, like, he should know, like, I don't have to make the weight. Don't make the weight.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to be the – I mean, what's going to happen? What could happen between the weigh-in and the fight? It's so rare.
It would have to be a stomach issue.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Or,
you know what I mean?
Someone is so fucked up from the weight cut.
That they just don't – they don't
they
come back
fainting.
From it. And Glover, at this point in his career, is not that guy. He's
no.
dialed in.
No.
Jamal dialed. Was dialed in.
Dialed in. Yeah. Jamal doesn't lose a lot of weight either.
No.
Jamal's pretty light.
And he brought in Ian, and – like, he had him cooking for him the whole damn time. Like, he was not going to miss weight.
Yeah.
He was not going to miss weight for that opportunity.
Yeah, it's hard.
I've never been the backup for anything like that. I've never had to go through that.
When did they start doing that?
I'm trying to think.
Fairly recently, right? Like, within the last 5 or 6 years?
I know, like, when Habib and Tony, when that kept falling out, I think that's when they were like, you know what? We should probably start having some backups for these types of situations.
Yeah.
And there's been another time where somebody missed really bad. We were talking about how – oh, my God. I'm going to blank on his name.
What weight class?
Welterweight. Vicente Luque took a backup spot on, like, super short notice. I think he missed by, like, 12 pounds or something.
Oh, God. Oh, no. Well, some of those guys are so fucking big.
They're so big, and they're like, it's a hard opportunity to turn down, right? It's like, hey, listen, you might fight, but chances are you're not. But we're going to pay you to fight.
Well, I mean, there's guys like Pajeda that can't make weight unless you give him 3 months,
yeah.
Which is so bonkers.
And I think Vicente was probably in that department where it was like, I'm not going to make this on. I think it was super short notice that he took it. And I could be also talking out of my ass right now.
Where Hamzat was talking about he wants to fight Pajeda. And Pajeda's like, good, let's fight a light heavyweight in Brazil.
72 hours?
Oh, 72 hours ago that it was in that position. Didn't feel that. Interesting.
Just Chael Sonnen explaining a backup fighter. I was trying to find the history of it, and as you were talking, they're talking about
interesting, interesting. Yeah, that's crazy.
Vicente Luque, backup fighter, coming in at 100.
No, not that bad. He only came in at 172.
Who told me 12 pounds?
Maybe he had to lose 12 pounds in a day or something like that.
I'm gonna have to find that source and get mad at him now.
What do you think of Kamaru Usman rematching Leon Edwards in London?
I love that it's in London for Leon.
For Leon, yeah.
I just, based on how that fight was going the first time, I think Kamaru's going to go in there and be much more dialed in and not allow a moment like that to happen again. Yeah. And I think he's going to be able to pull it off and win.
Well, it's hard to say, man, because when you watch a guy like Leon Edwards realized that he could KO Kamaru with one shot.
Yeah.
And then he pulls it off and did it. And also took him down in the first round. Now he's the champion. He's got that championship confidence, that championship rub.
Yeah.
You know, like, who knows?
I agree. I think he's going to have a lot more confidence coming into this one. And the London crowd is a real thing. I mean,
oh, yeah.
The last few that I've worked there, man, they make Brazil seem quiet anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, that crowd there is
they
just crazy.
And then you also have to realize that one of the beautiful things that Leon's done is he did it all from home. Like, he really didn't join American Top Team or, you know, TriStar. He didn't join a big camp.
No, he tried and he hated it.
Yeah.
He didn't want to be away from home, and we've talked to him a lot about this, and he realized that he can be at home working with good wrestlers and doing all that kind of stuff and focused on himself and not going away to America just to work his wrestling.
It's
like, how about you develop everything else and become a better fighter for the style that you're going to bring to the table, as opposed to trying to put yourself into this American style wrestling camp and just not working on yourself. You know, and you go to these big gyms, especially, you know, early on in his career, and you're just getting, okay, yeah, go over here and work with so-and-so. You're not getting that attention. You stay back home in England, and you're the star pupil. You got everybody working around you.
Yeah, the amount of hype that's going to be on that. And then there's the other thing is with Kamaru. Kamaru is famous for having knee problems. Like, he has horrendous knees.
Yeah, he can't even walk down steps, right?
Yeah.
He
walks down
walk
steps
backwards.
Backwards, yeah. Which is crazy that when he fights, he puts that all out the window. But when Leon took him down, he tripped him on his bad knee.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, both his knees are fucked, but one of his knees is worse. And he trips him on his bad knee, and his knee folds over, and he goes back down. And, you know, Kamaru's been pretty open about it, saying, I don't know how much longer my body's going to hold up.
Yeah.
He's also been pretty open about the fact that when his career's done, he's probably going to get his knees replaced. He's probably going to have to. I mean, his knees are chewed up, man.
Yeah.
Real bad.
Yeah, I remember being at, we did a thing, the UFC, when they were getting ready to start the PI at Exos, I think, out in Arizona, which is like a, kind of like the Performance Institute, but for, you know, NFL players trying to get back into the big league, you know, players in their offseason or rehabbing. And I got, it was me, him, and Max Holloway, and Kelvin Gastelum, actually, that were all part of the group. And they used to send a bunch of us to kind of test it out and give feedback on all that. And yeah, he was, it's amazing that he's dominated the way he has with those knees.
Oh my God. It's just mental strength.
Cause
it's his mind. He just pushes through. And, you know, Will Harris, who yeah. has done an amazing job of documenting, you know, the Dagestan Chronicles. And Will's the best. He's the best. When it comes to MMA, documentaries and covering these guys, like, he's such a good guy that everybody, like, lets him in. They trust mm-hmm. him. And then, in you know, he gets all this behind-the-scenes footage.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's got footage of Kamara where Kamara was, like, openly talking about it. Like, I don't know how much longer my body's going to hold up.
Yeah. It's all the wrestling for years mm-hmm. and years and years. And just genetics, right? Might just...
Yeah.
Once those knees go early and then you just pound on them. And just wrestling in general, man, mm-hmm. especially freestyle like that.
Brutal. Brutal. Yeah. Brutal. So many guys have blown out knees by the time their career is over.
Yeah. That necks. They're
yeah,
just necks.
Oh, yeah.
Even just anybody that's ever done any kind of grappling.
Well,
you know how it
is. Aljamain has a fake disc in his
yeah.
neck. You know?
And that's you see a lot of guys have that kind of
Weidman
injury.
Has
where,
that.
Yeah,
yeah,
man. Even like yeah. an old coach of mine, I remember him having like his neck fused together back in the day. That's scary, man.
Boss Rutten, that's the beginning of his problems. He got his neck fused and now his arm.
Yeah, and then you have like no range.
Atrophied.
You start losing. Yeah, mm-hmm. you start losing feeling in your
scary
arm.
Scary shit.
Yeah. No, yeah. Thanks.
It's a wild way to live your life, to decide that for the glory and the challenge and just the overwhelming difficulty of becoming a world-class fighter or a world champion fighter, that you put yourself through so much.
It's funny that you bring that kind of up, because it's hard to talk to people about why you do it if you don't understand it, right? Like, if you've never done combat sports or ever have that desire to fight and just be one of the best, it looks crazy to anybody on the outside.
Yes.
We look like we're absolutely lunatics, but
yes.
it's competition to us. I don't look at a fight and think, I want to fucking kill that person because I just want to be violent. It's like, I want to be better than that person. I want to be, and I want, you know, you want to achieve something that's, seems crazy to other people. And I think that's what obsesses a lot of us about it, is that you want to do something that 99% of the people in this world are terrified of doing. And walking to that cage is definitely one of the scary things. Aside from like anybody active military and does all that kind of stuff,
that's another level.
That's what I can't imagine.
Yeah. That's
and any
level.
Of my friends that have served and done that, I'm like, they're like, man, I don't know how you fight and do this. I'm like, what? Bro.
Crazy.
You fought in wars.
Right.
What are you talking about?
That's the highest level.
That's
and
the
those
highest
guys,
level.
It's the same sort of situation. They oftentimes want to go back.
Yeah.
It's like the thrill of that.
Yep. I can't imagine, because I know what it's like to want that fight feeling, to want that desire to get your hand raised, whether good, bad, or ugly, and you have like a depression when it's done, man. And I'm sure you've heard other fighters talk about this. Whether you win or lose, you build up to this moment, this fight camp. I'm fighting this guy. I'm going to get to the octagon, and then it's done.
Yeah,
you're like, oh,
well, that. I mean,
now what?
Times 10 with most people at the end of their career.
Yeah,
because now what?
Yeah, now the big now what?
Yeah, what do you do? And that's one of the things that I think is beautiful about what you've done. You've found something that's a challenge that can occupy your mind and your will and learn things.
And it's the same feeling though. When that race is done and I cross that finish line, as soon as it's done, you're like, oh. And everybody around's like, you fucking got your PR. That's great. You had your best run. You did this, or your swim was really good. And it's like,
now what?
I want to go faster. It's not fast enough.
Well, the guys are the real wild ones. Like, I've always wondered, like, how does John Jones deal with retirement? Like, is John so wild? Like, what is John going to do when it's all done? I mean, for the last 3 years, John has been thinking, okay, I'm going to build up to become a heavyweight.
Yeah, he still had a goal, extensive
weightlifting program. Yeah. Obviously, put in all this work to get so big, and really built himself up to be a legitimate heavyweight. And now, I mean, and also, John is what, 36 now? How old is John now?
I don't know.
How old is John Jones? When you go back to John Jones's first fight with Shogun, fighting for the world title, I always say this, one of the wildest things I've ever seen. The guy's fighting for the world title, youngest guy, 35, youngest guy ever to win the title. He opens up against a legend with a flying knee.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just wild.
Yeah, you can't.
John was just wild.
And doing and that is. On like
yeah.
an hour of sleep.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Dude, I can remember even back at Jackson's when we'd be there, he'd come rolling in and you could, you know, I didn't know him personally then, so I don't know what he was doing, but you could tell.
Partying.
He was probably partying and he'd come in and just.
Beat everybody's ass.
Clean the room, man.
Talent.
Just yeah, no issue.
Talent is not fair in its distribution. It's just not.
No.
Not I mean, at all.
And that's why so many people get so pissed. Mm-hmm. It's like. I did everything right, and this guy rolls in and kicks your ass.
Yeah. I'm very curious to see how he handles Ciryl Gane, because Ciryl Gane is so fucking smooth and fast on the feet. The KO of Tai Tuivasa.
Bro, like, the kicks that he was showing in that one.
My God.
The body work.
My God. But then you have to think, Francis out-wrestled him and took him down.
That's the big.
Yeah. And if Francis can take him down and out wrestle him.
What the hell is John Jones
going to do? What is John Jones going to do with him?
Yeah.
Or is John Jones as effective as a heavyweight?
Because of the size. That's the thing. It's like, well, Francis might not be the strongest wrestler, but he's humongous.
Right.
So even though he might not have the technical skills that John does, just
physical strength and
that's what I keep saying to everybody that asks me any questions about that one. I'm like, we're gonna
find out.
I don't know. This is truly one where we don't know. We have nothing to base it on because we can hear Jim's stories about how he handled heavyweights, but what's that like in the octagon on fight night?
Also, Ciryl Gane's had ample opportunity to prepare for that kind of wrestling strategy. Whereas I bet with Francis Ngannou, he didn't think Francis was going to try to take him down.
No, not like that.
He probably didn't prepare for a grappling match at all. Probably prepared for movement and try to outpoint him.
And then suddenly you find yourself
getting
put on your back. And you're like, oh.
And then you got to think, like, athleticism. Ciryl Gane is so athletic and he's such a good striker. When was the last time John fought a guy who was that athletic and a good striker? Well, that's Dominic Reyes.
Yeah, and he gave him a lot of trouble.
Gave him a lot of trouble. And Dominic Reyes is another one, right? Like, at the top of the heap, and then all of a sudden, boom. He just keeps getting flatlined.
And he's still talking about his next fight and coming back. I'll be back. I'm like,
bro, Ryan Spann is a motherfucker, dude. There's a guy that's super talented, and when he's training and in shape.
Yeah, well, he said he's not even been
training. So he wasn't even training. Bro, he knocked him out with like a kind of a jab hook.
Yep.
But it's just the speed and precision and
he's a freak.
He's a freak. You get these guys that are just like super fucking talented that just find their place.
It's funny to see when they realize, I can be a lot better if I train. It's like, no shit, dude. I can't believe it took you this long. I never even trained. I'm like.
Yeah, and you talk to Saif Saud and he'll tell you, like, you ain't even seen the best of this guy yet.
Yeah.
Like, he's fucking good. It's just like, what a wild time. It's a wild time for the sport.
Yeah, it's good.
So exciting.
It's very exciting.
All right, Paul Felder, I'm glad we did this, man. We've been talking about doing this for a while. It was a lot of fun.
I know, man. And, it was the thing. I never wanted to be that guy that was going to bug you about it. I'm like, I get to see Joe. I talk to Joe. I work with him. When the time is right, he'll eventually ask me to do this thing. And here we are, and we did it.
We did it.
So thanks,
thank you very much
for
being on, man. When are we working together again? Do you know?
I don't know.
Do you know when you're the next one you're calling?
Well, I mean, I know I'm doing the 18th. I'm doing Sanhagen and Vera.
Oh,
is the next one I'm working.
I was actually thinking of flying in for that.
Oh, if you're gonna,
I want to go to watch.
Just go watch. Yeah,
yeah. That's on February 18th.
Yeah, it's at the Apex.
Yes, that I fucking love that fight. I fucking love. Oh my God, Krylov and Spann. February 25th. Woo, that's also at the Apex.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like that fight.
I love, and Krylov is,
I
like
man.
That dude, man.
I was so surprised he stopped Gustafsson like that. Just stormed the gates and just came out guns blazing and
he's
put Gustafsson
powerful,
in one.
Man.
Sanhagen and Vera is a fight.
Yeah.
That is a fucking intriguing contest.
That's going to be bloody.
That was the one where I was like, man, I might fly in for that one. And Talia Santos versus Erin Blanchfield.
Blanchfield, man.
Woo!
She's tough.
She's fucking good, dude. Very exciting. But
And Benoit Saint-Denis, that kid's good too, man. This French like special forces guy.
Mm.
He's talented.
Yes, he is. It's a great time to be a fan, my brother.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much for being here. Appreciate
you.
Great working with you always.
Thank
Fun
you,
hanging out. All right. Bye, everybody.